Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. It is Friday, so that means all of our regular features will be coming up. Fly Jams Friday, straight out of context. We have no Nick D Show spies, I've been told. People have not been talking about me on the radio, which is okay. Yeah, so this is the second week in a row we haven't had any spies. So keep listening. If anybody mentions me, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We're curious. Also, we've got Vic's Picks, where we're go down that musical journey with Vic. He's been listening to the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, and he's getting near the top of the list. So we'll check in with him after the 3:30 news to find out what two albums we'll be discussing this morning. Fly Jams Friday, straight out of context. Straight out of context is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we've got You Big Dummy. You Big Dummy is where we gather together five news stories. They're all real, and they're real news stories about real people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who the real biggest dummy is. So that's You Big Dummy. All that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your Fly Jam requests. 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and also on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcasts. Everybody does it. If you can't listen live, the best way to listen is on our podcast. So go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, find the Nick D Show, and subscribe. It's free. And every single second of every single show is podcast. It will be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there it is, Friday morning. And coming up right after we break here in a few minutes, Eric Childress is going to join us. You know him from our Monday morning movie review segment. Well, I was under the weather on Monday and took the morning off, and we were going to have Eric not only review the latest movies with me and Steve Procopi, but we were going to have him give his final wrap-up of the Toronto International Film Festival. Eric covers all the fests for us. So we're going to have him do that this morning. He'll tell us all about the rest of the movies that he saw while he was in Toronto at the film festival, the good ones, the bad ones, and almost all of these movies we're going to get to see in a few weeks or a couple of months. So it'll be fun to get a jump on that. So Eric's going to join us to talk Toronto Film Festival in just a few minutes. And then after 2 o'clock, we're always excited. Esmeralda Leon is going to join us, the lovely Esmeralda Leon, back with us, and we're going to hang out in studio and catch up with her and talk about some fun stuff and play a round of For the Record with Slap Slaply and you know, just have fun in general. And Esmeralda will be here during all the regular features, and she can chime in as well. So that's what's coming up on the show. Again, 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and requests. Let me say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad. Not
all
too
right.
Bad.
Yeah, Cubs.
Mm.
The less we talk about it, the better.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man. Did you watch? You didn't watch Big Brother?
No. I got roped in. I said I wasn't going to watch it. I got roped into watching Gilmore Girls: A Year in the Life.
Ah, did you watch the whole thing?
I did.
It's great, right?
It's way better than a lot of that final season.
Yeah.
It's really great.
That's because it's Daniel and Amy Schumer-Palladino, and that's the key, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff. You know, the presence of Edward Herman, very much missed, but the way they handled it was very respectful, very beautiful.
Yeah.
And I love where the series ends itself, but I wouldn't be surprised if after Maisel gets done or...
Yeah,
a few seasons down the road, she returns.
I wouldn't mind it.
Gilmore Girls.
I wouldn't mind it. Yeah. And it does have that fantastic final sentence that Amy Sherman-Palladino knew that the show would end with that word, with those words, and it was pretty great. So, all right, well, cool. But anyway, Big Brother was you're caught up except for last night.
So I have,
you could pretty much figure out what happened last night.
Very much, yeah. I will still watch it today.
We're down to the final three. And I really, really, really am rooting for Nicole. I really, really am. I don't think it's going to happen, but man, I really want her to win.
Anything's possible, but
yeah. Well, all right. We'll see. You got plans for the weekend?
Yeah, just going to kind of hang out with some people. Going to check out the, Goose Island block party a little bit later today, in the evening and, you know, do some usual weekend stuff, cleaning, some grocery shopping, kind of stuff.
All right. All right. Let's go into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
We had a nice discussion about the Cubs, off the air.
You were leaving the newsroom, and I said, "Are you okay?"
Yeah,
and you looked at me like, "What are you talking about?"
You said Cubs, and I went, "Oh yeah, brutal, man. These are must win situations now. It's must win because they're not even in the playoff talk now. We can't even talk about postseason right now."
If the playoffs were held right now, we'd be out.
Exactly. But now we're not. We're still, you know, in it mathematically. We're still in it, and we still have a chance to get to the postseason.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, we got to get through. We got to figure out the Cardinals because out of the last, how many games are left? Ten.
There are nine games.
Nine games left. So six.
Six with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's there lies the road to the playoffs.
Those are must win.
Yeah.
Must win. You got plans for the weekend, Vic?
Work actually. You know, we've been doing this music thing, and I'm doing a podcast on it. We've been working on it, and we're almost close. We're close to getting the first one done. So working on that.
All right. Cool. And we'll visit with you. About that, Vic's picks. We got two more albums to talk about as you make your way through the top 100 of all time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Very, very cool. All right, that's Vic Vaughn. He is in the newsroom all morning. Tom Hush is producing. I'm your host. Esmeralda Leon, who used to do traffic regularly with us, joins us this morning because she's awesome. And we're going to play a round of For the Record, and Slap Slaply is on his way in his private jet right now to host that competition for us. And that's all coming up here. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, Eric Childress will join us, and he will give us his final reviews and the wrap-up of the films that he saw at the Toronto International Film Festival. And that's coming up right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here on a Friday morning. All of our regular Friday features are coming up. And we will have our good friend Esmeralda Leon live in studio with us for all of our Friday features. And we'll play a little game, as we all often do, For the Record. We'll play a little quiz and catch up with Esmeralda. Always fun to have her hanging out. So that's what's coming up on the show this morning here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text on your Fly Jam requests. Yes. All right. I was under the weather on Monday morning. So I want to thank Dane Neal again for sitting in. Therefore, we did not review the movies. We didn't do the Monday morning movie review segment. And in that segment, we were also going to have Eric Childress do his full wrap-up of the movies that he saw at the Toronto International Film Festival, where he was for a bunch of days. But since I was out, we decided we would do it this morning. So we've got Eric with us, and he is going to do his final wrap-up of Toronto. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so did you have fun in Toronto? Was it a good fest? How would you rank it?
I ended up seeing 31 movies in Toronto. And I think I ended up liking 14, about, you know, another three or four kind of on the so-so maybe list. But, you know, ultimately, I mean, it was such a sort of a previewed festival in a way, because all the responses coming out of Venice and Telluride before the festival, all these great titles were being launched. So it was just the excitement level going into Toronto was kind of off the charts this year.
Yeah.
And there were certainly some disagreements amongst critics there. There were some films that I didn't expect to like as much as I did. There are others that I hoped I liked more. But, you know, overall, you know, I saw some good stuff, and, you know, we've still got stuff to talk about tonight that, you know, is what everyone wants to hear about.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, let's get to it wherever you want to start. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, we might as well start, you know, we might as well not beat around the bush and just talk about what I think was the best film that I saw at Toronto,
okay.
A film that we didn't talk about last time, and that's Bong Joon-ho's Parasite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bong Joon-ho, who did The Host and Snowpiercer, amongst another number of other you know, terrific movies, has delivered something here that, it's one of these movies that, you know, I want to tell you everything about, but I don't want to tell you anything about. Basically, if people saw the movie, the film Shoplifters last year, you know, it's sort of that, but on, you know, what they would say, on crack, if you will. because it's basically, you know, the setup of the movie is pretty fun and simplistic. It's kind of a lower-class family that is, kind of specializes in basically just mooching their way through life. They steal Wi-Fi from above, you know, from their neighbors. You know, they find ways to get cheap food and stuff like that. But it's a mother and a father, and their two a teenage son and daughter. And the teenage son has a college friend who's been tutoring the younger daughter of this wealthy, well-to-do family, and basically asks the son if he could, substitute for him while he, you know, goes away. So the son takes over as tutor for this family, and over the course of time begins to develop new positions within the family that his own family can then come and basically all mooch off this wealthy family while basically being their employees. Find, you know, and then impersonating, you know, different, you know, higher up positions. Needless to say, that's not all I want to tell you about this movie, because, you know, there have been so many movies that have been dealing with the subject of race. I mean, this is a Korean film, so, you know, some of that, you know, comes into play a bit. But movies about class are something that are particularly interesting to me, and this movie is as savage and as funny and as pointed as any film I can think of recently to tackle that subject matter. And the less you know about this movie going in, the more rewarding it's going to be. You're not going to see where this film is going, but if you are a fan of the filmmaker, you know that that's exactly what he's going to deliver to you. So, Parasite, this movie just absolutely floored me. I can't wait to see it again. I wish I could see it with people just to see the reaction to some of the twists and turns in this movie. But it is absolutely everything that was advertised.
Wow. Okay. It seems like does it seem like a change of pace for the director?
Not really, because I mean, we're familiar with his films as anyone else, and you know, he's a guy that works in different genres. But you know, within those genres, he plays with them a bit. He plays with tone. He shifts in between comedy and terror and sci-fi and horror and all these different types of things that he deals with. So it fits thematically very much in what he's, I guess, particularly, you know, considering what Snowpiercer was about. This is not a science fiction film, but. People who, you know, hear the title Parasite, they might be thinking like, oh, the guy who did The Host is now doing this.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, no, don't go in expecting that, but expect something a little bit more closer to the themes that he was tapping into with Snowpiercer. And trust me, it is a funny ride, but it can be a brutal one too.
Okay. That's Parasite. Does it have are we going to get to see it? Does it have a release date?
Oh yeah. Neon has this film, and I think it's coming out in October.
Oh, okay. All right,
so people will get a chance to see this soon. And seriously, the talk of this movie, there are a lot of people saying that it could be a Best Picture contender.
Not just Best Foreign Film, but Best Picture.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. All right. So that's Parasite. All right. Okay. We'll look forward to that in October. Okay. What do you want to go next?
Well, let's go to the film that certainly, in some ways was, you know, a very controversial film at Toronto because of the split opinion on it, and that's Taika Waititi's Jojo Rabbit.
Okay, yes. All right, I'm very curious about that. I'm very curious about this. Jojo Rabbit, the trailer's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I haven't seen the most recent trailer for the film, so I don't know exactly how much they give away, but for people who don't know what this movie is about, it's set in Nazi Germany towards the end of World War II, and it's focused on a young boy who very much wants to join the ranks of the Nazis. And he has an imaginary friend named Adolf Hitler, played by Taika Waititi.
Uh-huh.
yeah. And his mother's played by Scarlett Johansson, one of the Nazi commandants who has been put in charge of the kids' camp. Is played by Sam Rockwell, playing another racist. poor guy. But and this is another movie that again takes a number of kind of unexpected turns. And when this movie began, I was, you know, kind of a little bit of a distance from it, in the same way that I was with the trailer. I wasn't sure how broad Waititi was going to go with the Hitler stuff, if it was going to play out. In a more satiric tone than we were used to, and so early on, you know, he plays Hitler very broad in the film. I mean, yeah. It's basically Taika Waititi as Adolf Hitler,
right?
And so, but then the movie, you know, kind of shifts about a third of the way in, and kind of reveals that it's going to be, I'll just say, a little bit more Anne Frank than what we do in The Shadows. But at the same time, maintaining, you know, the kind of neat trick of still managing to get you to laugh through a situation that is, you know, very perilous. And I think he mostly pulls it off. I think the movie, as it goes along, gets funnier. It certainly gets more poignant. It gets more interesting. He doesn't shy away from, you know, some of the horror that's inherent in this kind of story. And by the end, I was won over by it. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I don't buy into this idea that you can't, you know, make fun of Hitler and this period. I think anything is ripe for satire. If you don't pull it off, then I suppose you get more outrage than, you know, if it was just a close call. But I thought it mostly worked. And by the end of it, I was, you know, I kind of was just like, you know, you did it. You did manage to pull it off. So I was very happy with it. Other people, not so much. But I think, you know, it's not going to be really a love it or, you know, it might be more hate than love. But I think there'll be a lot of people in the middle on this one.
Okay. And so the response, what were some of the other responses? People just, like, nobody's in the middle. They either love it or hate it.
I think the responses are kind of all over the place. There were some people that immediately got their knives out for the movie, and I don't think that. It shouldn't be a love or hate it kind of movie, because again, I'm very much kind of right down the middle of it. I was telling nothing about the movie I hated. I just thought that it took a little bit of time to find its voice, and when it finally did, I was quite taken with it. You have Stephen Merchant as a Nazi in it, for God's sake. So you're going to get at least one really funny scene out of the movie of that. And Sam Rockwell is great. The kid is really good. Waititi gets his laughs in as Hitler. Some people at the end of the movie, I think, is either going to really move people or really put people off.
Right.
I'll say that too.
All right. That's Jojo Rabbit, and it comes out October 18th. And there you go. All right, Eric, hang on, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, Eric Childress is with us, and we are a special Friday morning visit with Eric, and he has just given us a roundup and a wrap-up of all the movies that he saw in Toronto at the Toronto International Film Festival, and right after the news, we'll jump right back in it with Eric Childress right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. I always think of the best scene in Baby Driver every time I hear that song. Hi, welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Friday morning, so all the regular Friday features will be happening. and more. And Esmeralda Leon is going to be joining us after 2 o'clock. She'll be live in studio. We'll hang out with her. We'll play a little round of Know Your Onion. We're going to play For the Record. And Slap Slaply will be here to take us through that. So that's all coming up here on this Friday morning here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Eric Childress, who reviews movies with us every Monday morning, also covers the film festivals for us. And we get exclusive looks and reviews of movies that we'll see in the coming weeks and months. He was in Toronto at the Toronto International Film Festival, and he's giving us his final report on that. So let's get back to it. Eric, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead. Next.
Okay, I'm sure you're very curious about the movie The Lighthouse.
Absolutely. Yes, I am very, very curious. This is a follow-up to The Witch.
Yeah, this is Robert Edgar's follow-up to The Witch, shot in black and white in 1:3:3 Academy ratio. And it's it's a very kind of simple story about two men played by Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe who basically are put assigned to, you know, keep a lighthouse for, you know, about, I think, like 4 weeks in the movie. Willem Dafoe's kind of the old crusty sea dog, you know, guy in charge, Robert Pattinson. Hints of his past that he might be someone who's been on the run or is looking to sort of, you know, do something, you know, a little bit better with his life. But he's constantly harassed and put to the task by Dafoe day in and day out, to the point that he, you know, starts to just kind of, you know, lose his grip a little bit, including not just with Dafoe, but also, you know, the witch had a crazy goat.
Yeah.
The lighthouse has a crazy seagull. Yeah. The seagull might actually be my favorite part of this movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because like The Witch, you know, which is not a film that I was as big a fan of as everyone else. I thought that there was a lot of really interesting stuff in The Witch that I felt was a bit undermined by its finale. I thought it kind of erased some of the things that it was trying to say by basically giving us the big supernatural finale that that it offered up. Well, this movie in kind of has that same sort of spirit. And that most of the way you're not quite sure if you're even necessarily watching a horror movie or not. I even hesitated to even call it that much. Because even though, you know, people will talk about this be kind of a the descent into madness, it doesn't have, for me, it's just two guys yelling at each other for the better part of 100 minutes. Which sometimes can be very entertaining. The two guys get drunk a lot. There's just some weird sexual satisfaction going on in the film, and it's kind of plays episodic. It's like it doesn't, you know, for me anyway, it didn't have that kind of natural flow where you're really kind of engrossed in someone and terrified for someone who's sort of losing their marbles, because it just seems like, again, they yell at each other, then they get drunk, they make up, and then, you know, you might be having visions of a mermaid and the seagulls there, and by the end of it, I was just kind of like, that was 108 minutes, and I just kind of shrugged it off, unfortunately.
Oh,
but
okay.
I don't think people are as high on this movie as they were on The Witch, but there are definitely some people that are very high on it. So you might like it more than I did.
Okay, yeah, because I'm a huge fan of The Witch. I think The Witch is a great film, and I'm really looking forward to this one. I love the two guys. I think they're both awesome.
The two of them are very good. Yeah, watching the two of them play off each other is, you know, what's really so interesting about the movie, when it kind of separates them and kind of shows, you know, Pattinson, you know, going off in his own headspace. It's less interesting.
Okay.
For me, anyway.
Well, that also opens on the same day as the last movie you were talking about. That opens on October 18th.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that's The Lighthouse. All right, what do we got next?
Another one that's coming out later this year in November, Ford versus Ferrari.
Okay.
With Christian Bale and Matt Damon. This is a true story of when the Ford Motor Company was sort of declining in sales, I think in the 60s or the late 50s, and Ferrari was getting all the press because of their involvement in the racing game. Aided by Lee Iacocca, they basically, you know, want to get into the racing game and have to invent a car that's going to be able to compete. Matt Damon plays a former race car driver who now runs, his own race car team. Christian Bale is the guy that's sort of the hot-headed but, you know, perfect driver of his team. And they basically team up with Ford to create basically the perfect muscle car that's going to compete in the professional racing game. I don't know about you, Nick. Racing, to me, not that interesting. And even movies about racing, you know, as far as I'm concerned, give me Talladega Nights. That's basically the hill I'm willing to die on with racing movies.
What about Driven?
What about Driven?
Rennie Harlan, man.
What about Driven? I'll raise you Days of Thunder. Anyway, we each have our bad racing movie that we love. Okay. But this one, James Mangold directed the movie, and he's been on a, you know, pretty decent streak recently. And you could tell that this was more like a passion project for him. You know, he must be a racing fan or found something really interesting in the story that he didn't quite communicate with myself, and I think a lot of critics there were not as enthused with this movie. It's 2.5 hours long, and I think that you really have to be like a serious gearhead to really kind of appreciate some of the stuff that goes on, because it didn't really bring me into the fold as what's interesting about them creating this car. The interplay between Bale and Damon, again, when the two of them are on screen together, the film, you know, has a little bit of punch, especially when they're at odds with each other.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, it just feels like, you know, something that you would have seen on cable that was just kind of slapdash and thrown together, and every once in a while, you know, the loud, you know, buzzing of the race cars will wake you up a bit. The whole movie to me just kind of felt kind of even keeled and flat, and never really elevated itself into something that I would call, you know, necessarily a prestige picture.
Yeah, that's too bad, man, because, you know, I thought the trailer was great, and I think Mangold has directed some really great movies, and I was...
He has.
Yeah, I mean, his last movie is, like, the best comic book movie ever made, in my opinion.
Logan.
And, Logan. But I was really looking forward to this. That's too bad. Okay, well, it opens on November 15th, and it's called Ford versus Ferrari. It'll have a wide release November 15th. They're obviously releasing it at that time for, like, Oscar consideration and stuff like that.
Right,
You know, considering your two leads are Oscar nominees every year almost, so.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Ford versus Ferrari. Okay, where do you want to go next?
Let's go to one of the better movies of the fest. It was actually the last movie I saw on the last day.
Okay.
That I was there, and that's Waves.
Oh, see, this is another one. This is another one that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, and this one you absolutely should be looking forward to. You know, when the Toronto announced the schedule, there were two films on the list. If we have time, we'll get to the other one. But the fact that Trey Edward Schultz, who's only done two other movies, Krisha and the horror film That Comes at Night.
Right, and which are both great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So to see that he had this new film that I knew very little about on the schedule immediately piqued my interest, and I could not wait to see it. The fact that the buzz coming into Toronto and then the early screenings of Toronto elevated it as like one of the biggest surprise. Well, you know, people are using the M word, many times to describe this movie. Really, just I'm like, oh my gosh, and this is going to be my finale. You know, my finale last year was Roma,
and yeah, wow, man,
and this year was Waves.
Wow,
yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have preambled it with Roma, but this made my top five of the festival. It's, again, it's the kind of a story that you don't want to know too much going about, because it does take some twists and turns that change up your perception of what, you know, what the movie is ultimately about.
Yeah.
But basically, Sterling, Kelvin Harrison Jr., he's having a hell of a year.
Yeah.
People who have seen Loose, he was in It Comes at Night.
Yeah.
This guy is he's a star.
Yeah.
Man, this guy is a star. And he plays the teenage son of a well-to-do, well-to-do black family. And he's a high school wrestler. And he's beginning to see the sort of the cracks of the veneer of, you know, a kid that thinks he's got everything planned out and all, you know, all together. A little things just start to crack in his veneer. Some of it out of his control, some of it very much in his control, but it slowly begins to kind of spin all out of control for him. Sterling K. Brown, the great Sterling K. Brown, plays his father, a man that some people might mislabel as abusive. He's not, to me, he's not abusive. He's just a classic dad, pushing his son to be the best he possibly can. And as he says in the movie, a black man has to be 10 times better than anyone else. Otherwise, they're not going to get noticed. So he's trying to look out for his son, and that might contribute to, what this kid's going through. And again, it takes these twists and turns, and you see this movie that is ultimately about not just despair, but healing, most importantly.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a movie that sneaks up on you to what it is ultimately about. And it's very moving. It's exceptionally well acted. And Tranmere Schultz, man, this guy has an uncanny ability for silent tension.
Yeah.
In a way that few directors possess.
Oh, yeah. Currently. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was like in knots during all of It Comes at Night.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is a drama. This is not a thriller or a horror movie, but the tension that builds throughout the what the character of Kelvin Harrison is going through. We talked last time about Uncut Gems, which is a 2-hour and 15-minute nervous breakdown for Adam Sandler.
Right.
This movie it's quieter, but it's there and you feel it.
Yeah.
And then when it finally kind of explodes, you just kind of like you almost want to cry.
Yeah.
Just to release the tension. So this movie is another one that's as good as advertised.
Great. That's called Waves, and it comes out November 1st. And I also see on the cast list my main man Clifton Collins Jr. is in it.
Don't get too excited. Only because you see him in the credits, and like when he finally shows up, like he's in it. I'm like, and he's gone again. Oh,
right. Okay. That's too bad.
He's literally in two scenes for about 45 seconds, and I don't think he has a line of dialogue.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well,
but nevertheless an important character.
Cool. But I mean, I'm just glad he's in it because I love the guy. So I've loved him since he was Clifton Gonzalez. So
that's right.
Because that's how he's built.
Put him in everything.
That's how he's
put
built.
Put him in everything. I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. It was the only part of the Scott Pilgrim that I liked, him and Thomas Jane. It was like Edgar Wright read my mind. Like it's like two guys that I worship that nobody else worships, and he puts them in the same movie. All right, hang on. Eric, hang on.
Thanks.
All right, Eric Childress is with us. We'll take a break, come back, and we'll wrap it up. Toronto International Film Festival reviews. More after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are coming up. Our great friend Esmeralda Leon is going to be here. We'll catch up with her, play a little trivia with her, and hang out. And it's going to be a fun morning. We're here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Eric Childress joins us every Monday morning to review the movies. And he was in the Toronto Film Festival, and we're doing our final wrap-up here. Eric, I think we only got time for a couple more, so pick what you want here.
Okay, well, we'll lead up to what I think is the worst film of the festival, and we'll leave a little bit more time for that.
But okay.
I do want to mention there was another misfire at the festival that I'm kind of sad to report on, and that's Steven Soderbergh's The Laundromat, which is going to be on Netflix, and this is basically his version, also scripted by Scott D. Burns, who he's worked with a number of times, and has a great movie coming out later this year called The Report that he wrote and directed. But this is basically Steven Soderbergh's take on the Panama Papers. People remember the story, basically this whole whistleblower situation where it was revealed that where all these corporations and people and things put their money into bogus corporations,
right?
Offshore and stuff,
right?
And this movie kind of plays a little kind of episodic with showing you how certain people in the States are affected because of these people, and he's kind of doing it with this kind of intersection of what they did with The Informant, but also what Adam McKay did with The Big Short, and trying to really just kind of spoon feed it to you a bit. And yet, as much spoon feeding as they did, I still didn't quite understand everything that they were trying to show is like additional outrage to what we didn't already know about this situation.
Right.
Fantastic cast. Meryl Streep, Gary Oldman, Antonio Banderas. Terrific cast. But the film, it just it's never as funny as it thinks it is. The approach to have Gary Oldman and Antonio Banderas narrate the film to the audience and break the fourth wall, that none of that works, I think, at all. And you know, by the end of it, it was just kind of like, you know, I've seen this done much better before, and you didn't really break any new territory with the story.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad. What, I mean, I'm looking at this cast list. It's insane.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and Soderbergh. Well, that's too bad. So that's a disappointment. Okay,
yeah.
Well, we're leading up to, I mean, the movie comes out October 3rd, and it's been getting a lot of buzz. In Venice, it took the top prize, and it is Joker with Joaquin Phoenix, written and directed by Todd Phillips, you know, the auteur of the Hangover movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie looks awful, but it's been getting great reviews, and I got a text from you after you saw it.
Yeah.
So tell everybody.
You have that text in hand?
I have it, yes. So tell everybody what you thought of Joker.
It's absolute garbage.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the shorthand of it. And we could actually talk at length about why I think it's garbage. You know, I mean, people, you know, this is going to be a weirdly divisive film. I mean, the comic book, if you thought it was bad with the normal Marvel DC stuff that's been coming out, this, I think, is going to bring out people that, you know, I don't even know. And I'm really kind of shocked to see people, colleagues of ours, you know, give this movie not just a pass, but to proclaim it as some kind of masterpiece. I'm stunned by it. Because, I mean, again, If I go off on a rant here, we'll be here all night.
Yeah.
But you know, the basic breakdown of this is that Todd Phillips can't make movies.
Right.
And,
I think we
knew
that. I think he established that already.
Right. but you know, absolutely. But honestly, you know, going into this, considering the praise that I was getting, I'm thinking like, well, maybe he's just really bad at comedies.
Right.
Because that's all he's done. Maybe he's going to show us something that we've never seen before. No, we have. It's called the Todd Phillips movie.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what he made. And you know, and I don't mean that the fact that it's not funny, because we've seen him do that many times before. But the fact that the movie is just so flat and uninspired, and people giving, you know, I know you were not a fan at all of Joaquin Phoenix's last, you know, critically acclaimed film.
Yeah.
You Were Never Really Here.
I hated that movie, yeah.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I know you did. But the people, everyone praising Joaquin Phoenix's performance here, I think is even off base as well, because I don't think he's particularly good in this movie. In fact, you know, I didn't, not once during this movie did I invoke the name Heath Ledger in my brain, because I was too taken with the awfulness of what was going on with the direction of the story. And I am convinced that Joaquin Phoenix is actually gives a performance less Heath Ledger and more Tommy Wiseau.
Oh man!
Yeah, I think that there are elements of this film that are kind of jaw droppingly bad.
Yeah.
The camera barely moves throughout this film. You want to talk about a movie where the score does all of the heavy lifting, all of the dread and the menace associated with this movie? It all comes out in the score. That's the only thing about this movie that I could even praise is the score. But it's literally doing all of Todd Phillips' work for him. Joaquin Phoenix is trying to help him out, but he has no idea how to direct the story, who the Joker is, puts us at arm's length immediately by basically, you know, telling us that he's got a mental illness. Okay, so we like the veneer of the Joker is kind of stripped off immediately. And again, you know, this is a movie that it's going to be challenging to talk about with people, because I don't know what they are experiencing watching this film. But I saw an absolute piece of trash.
Yeah.
And it very well may be the worst film that I see all year.
You know, that this review does not surprise me. Since they even announced this thing, I was like, what? And here's just a basic question. How many Jokers do we need? like in film. Seriously, right. How many do we need? I mean, look, and especially after what Heath Ledger did, why would you even want to attempt, you know what I mean, to play that character right. after what Heath Ledger did? And I don't even like the movie, but Heath Ledger's he's brilliant in it. And yeah. why would you even try to do that? I mean, you know, Jared Leto and all these, I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand why they even made this movie. And it is sanctioned DC, correct?
Yeah. It absolutely is. Yeah. And, I don't know what, you know, they're going to do with this character, what they think they were doing with this character, what this character ultimately represents. And one of the things that, you know, again, we'll talk about this more in a few weeks, but, you know, when people saw the trailer and described the latest trailer and described it as Taxi Driver meets King of Comedy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Clearly, Todd Phillips saw those movies.
Yeah.
He watched King of Comedy, you know, drunk one night on cable and thought he understood it.
Well, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, because De Niro, you know, you see the role that De Niro plays in this movie. And De Niro looks so uncomfortable in this movie.
Yeah.
He looks more uncomfortable in this movie than he's ever looked on SNL.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. We'll get into this a little bit more. Let me just really quickly. Is Zazie Beetz wasted because I adore her?
Yes.
Okay. That's too bad.
Yes, and she's wasted in a way that will infuriate you.
Okay, that's too bad because I love her. So.
I know.
Okay, Joker, worst movie of the year or so far?
Could be. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Eric. Thanks for all the reports from Toronto. I really appreciate it, man. And
absolutely.
We will talk to you. We'll talk to you on Monday for reviews. We'll catch up on Hustlers too on Monday since we didn't get to review it. And then we've got Ad Astra, Downton Abbey, and Rambo. This weekend.
Yeah, can't wait.
Okay. We'll see you later, Eric. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
Okay, take care. It's going to be a fun Monday morning with those reviews. So, all right. Well, thanks to Eric. Now you guys know what's going on for the Toronto Film Festival, and you can make your judgments when you see these movies in the coming weeks. Okay. All right, we'll take a quick break. The news is coming up, and after the news, Esmeralda Leon is going to be here, right here on 720 WGN.
You can turn the world on with a smile.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago. What the hell? Can you drink? Did you forget how to drink? Oh, it's a little hot.
It's a little hot.
Oh, okay.
Just a little bit.
Esmeralda, beginning of the segment here.
Drinking a warm drink.
Did a spit take. Thank you very much, everybody.
It wasn't really. It was more spit up.
It was like
just a little spittle take.
Yeah. Well, that's Esmeralda Leon. Hi, Esmeralda.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Esmeralda's going to be here for the rest of the show. So if you guys want to text or call in and say hi to her, it's 312-981-7200. We'll get to all of our regular Friday features. There's no spies. Apparently, nobody was talking about me on the air this week at the station. So there are no spies, but we have out of context. And I hope we have Lou Manfredini. Every time you come down,
let's hope so.
I hope there's a Lou Manfredini.
Someone just tell him and then he can be.
Yeah, just somebody tell him. Let him know when Esmeralda's going to be on so that the week before on his show he can swear or do something goofy.
Yeah, that's it. Just
So we got also, we got Vic's Picks, where we'll find out what Vic has been listening to on his musical journey. And Fly James Friday, if you want to jump in with your requests. 312-981-7200. How you been?
Good.
Been
doing well, yeah.
Yeah, well, good. Well, thanks for coming down.
Yeah, thank you.
And you're, but see the weird thing is now that this is not your schedule anymore.
No.
You have normal people's schedule.
Yes. And I didn't take a nap or anything, so
uh-oh.
We'll see how this goes. It'll be fun.
Is there caffeine in what you're drinking?
Yeah, it's coffee.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. You think, was it?
You know, it's from a machine.
Yeah. We have a coffee, like, vending machine, like.
Yes.
Where you press
it's
a button.
Coffee. I trust it's coffee.
Yeah. I don't drink that stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, I just, it's a steady diet of water is what I drink.
Then, no, that's good for you.
Yeah.
This is very dehydrating and terrible for me, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, you got to stay awake.
Exactly.
Can't fall asleep during the show. We were talking a little bit off the air about, like, you know, because we always talk about what have you been watching lately? Have you been watching any TV or any movies or anything like that? Because we talk pop culture on this show, as you know. And for people who don't know, by the way, Esmeralda used to do traffic on our show. And now she visits us usually about once a month just to get in here. Well, we're going to play a round of Know Your Record.
Yeah.
For the record.
You're just going to show me vinyl records?
Yeah.
Do you know this one?
No, because we do a game called Know Your Onion that Tom actually made up. And
yes.
The idea of the game is Tom reads. We get a listener online.
Uh-huh.
Tom reads them news headlines.
Oh,
and you have to get, because everything is insane now in the real world. That sometimes you can't tell the difference between an onion headline and a real headline.
Yeah.
So we read the news headline and people have to say either real or onion.
Why did I wish it was actual onions?
Real onions? No, you're onion.
What is this? This is a
Vidalia. So anyway, that's why I had that on my mind when I was saying this. But we are going to play, for the record, Slap Slapley.
Is he coming?
He's on his way. He's in his private jet. And he'll land it right on the roof of...
Of course.
Of right here on Wacker. So anyway, we'll do that a little bit later on. But we were talking about what you've been watching, and you mentioned that V enjoys Face Off.
Yes.
And so you watched Face Off, but the reason why you watched it is because you actually loved Hard Target.
I enjoyed Hard Target.
Yeah.
Especially, who's the bad guy?
Lance Hendrickson.
Yeah.
My man.
So good.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I'm like, should I be watching more John Woo movies?
Yes,
because
you should.
Because I don't think I have.
Yes, you should. So you watched Face Off.
So watched Face Off.
This is the movie with... By the way, there's talk of a remake right now of Face Off.
No.
I totally agree.
No.
That's what I'm saying. No. Yes.
The movie's too terrible.
So it's Travolta, and for people who don't know, it's Travolta and Nicolas Cage,
mm-hmm.
and they end up switching faces.
Yes.
And it's a John Woo movie, so it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's very confusing if you've never seen it and you ask, because when I hadn't seen it yet, I went, well, who's the bad guy? And they go, well,
yeah,
the bad guy's John Travolta, but really he's Nicolas Cage. It's like, oh
yeah.
I guess I'll just watch it.
So did you enjoy Face Off?
It was ridiculous.
It's completely ridiculous.
There's just so much. I get that John Woo loves the doves.
Oh, yeah. That's his signature thing.
But I'm just like, there's doves in this church
mm-hmm.
by a beach.
Yeah.
It's a beach church.
Well, wait till you see the killer. There's an overwhelming amount of doves in the killer. But here's the thing. So you've only seen Face Off and Hard Target.
Yes.
As John Woo goes.
I believe so. I haven't really looked at his discography.
Okay.
Or his
discography.
you know, all those top 10 songs he had.
But here's the thing. I have to tell you. You got to go to the Hong Kong movies.
Right. No, I expect those would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he's directed good American films. He has.
Mm-hmm.
he's worked with Travolta twice. He directed a movie called Broken Arrow.
Oh, right. We did see the... Yeah.
But you can't top the stretch of movies that he did...
In Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong.
Well, yeah, those are... I mean, I've heard, you know, the Hong Kong... films from back in the day were amazing.
So listen, let me give you some things here. You have to see A Better Tomorrow.
Okay.
You have to see A Better Tomorrow 2.
Mm-hmm.
You have to see The Killer.
Mm-hmm.
A Bullet in the Head.
Right. See, but these all sound like they're going to be good movies. I, for some reason, keep watching movies that are not on
Hard Target and Face Off. Hard Target's better than Face Off. I think Hard Target's better than Face Off.
Yes.
I think Hard Target, in fact, might be John Woo's best American film.
I want to say yes, but then I'm biased because I love Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Right. I mean, he directed Mission Impossible 2.
I think I saw that.
Good, but it's the most disappointing, oddly, the most disappointing
mm-hmm.
of the Mission Impossible movies when you get like one of the greatest action directors in the world, and that's the most disappointing one. He directed Paycheck, which is a ridiculous movie.
It's Ben Affleck in it?
Yes.
Oh, see, no, thank you.
Wind Talkers. No, that's a good one. Wind Talkers is a really good film. That's up there.
The Native Americans in World War...
Yes, World War II.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he did that, Broken Arrow, Hard Target. But Once a Thief is a really fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the deal here is, the deal is hard-boiled.
Okay.
And
is that a Hong Kong or a...
It's Hong Kong.
Okay.
That's that stretch of movies he did with Chow Yun-Fat, who basically, he turned Chow Yun-Fat into a... Well, Chow Yun-Fat is a movie star, but because of all the John
Did
Woo
they
movies.
Do the... Was he in The Replacement...
Replacement Killers, yeah.
Yeah.
That was with... Who was this?
Was that John
Wahlberg?
Woo?
Was that... Well, no, that wasn't John Woo.
The Replacement Killers?
Yeah.
Was it... No.
Who was it? Wahlberg? Or
what's the one with Chow Yun-Fat and... she was Mighty Aphrodite.
Mia Sorvino.
Yes.
Mira Sorvino.
Oh. Weren't they in a movie together?
Maybe they were.
Am I thinking?
Well, The Replacement Killers was Antoine Fuqua.
Right. And who's the dude? Who's the partner? Like,
wasn't Chow Yun-Fat?
The young American. You don't know, it's Chow Yun-Fat, but he's paired up with a young American.
I think it's Mira Sorvino.
Is it Mira Sorvino?
I think because I remember when I first saw previews for it, thinking it looked so cool.
Who's the...
All right. Yeah, Replacement Killers is Chow Yun-Fat, Mira Sorvino, Michael Rooker.
Okay. How could we have forgotten Michael Rooker?
Well, so he's, you know, he's been doing movies.
But that wasn't John Woo.
No, that's not John Woo. Antoine Fuqua. Be careful. But he directed Training Day.
Okay. I won't see Training Day.
Why?
I've only watched a little bit of it because I don't like how Denzel Washington is in it.
He's amazing in that movie.
He's so mean.
Oh, he's the worst. It's my favorite. No, it's my second favorite Denzel Washington.
I tried to watch it, and I just couldn't deal with how terrible he was. I don't know why.
What?
It made me uncomfortable. Slap the taste
out your mouth.
No, how terrible the character is.
Okay, how mean he is.
Yes.
Yeah, how just terrible, and I couldn't.
Well, that's a testament to how good his performance is in that movie.
I was uncomfortable with it. I can't watch this.
I adore that movie. I love that movie, and he's great in it. And so is Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke is great, too.
Yeah. I mean, I love Denzel. I just watched the where he's old man beats people up for revenge.
Oh yeah. Extermin? No. What the hell is it called? It was based on
something.
The TV show.
I love those old man, quiet old man has a quiet life and then has to take revenge and just beat everyone up.
And it was a sequel too, because he's made two of them.
Yes, I saw the second one.
Equalizer. There you go. Thank you. Equalizer and Equalizer 2. It's the only sequel he's ever done.
Really,
Denzel.
I mean, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I need to watch the first
one. No, it's fine. He just beats the hell. Listen, man.
I love that.
I will watch Denzel beat the crap out of people for 3 hours. I don't care.
I love all those movies. The one with, who was Alfie? The first Alfie.
Jude Law.
No, the.
Oh, Michael Caine.
Michael Caine, when he's, again, old guy, quiet life.
Yeah.
Takes revenge.
Harry Brown.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
We got
some texts coming in and a phone call. It's Bruce on WGN. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Nick, how you doing, buddy?
All right, man, what's up?
I just want to say I love listening to you. I listen to you every night. I'm driving a truck at night coming up from Indianapolis.
Thanks,
and,
man.
Love the show.
Thank you.
I love Esmeralda, and you guys are awesome.
Thanks.
I don't know, go Hawks, go Bears.
All right.
Nick, before I get off, I just wanted to say, hello.
All right, take care, buddy.
All right,
there you go. It's Bruce. Wanted to say hi to Esmeralda. Got some texts here, Esmeralda.
Oh, okay.
773 area code from, that's as Mark the Breadman says in the Seinfeld voice to Esmeralda, a big hello. That's a Seinfeld reference.
Yes. No, I know the.
Okay. 301 area code says, it's always great to hear Esmeralda on the show, exclamation points.
Oh, thank you.
Jerry says, always awesome to hear E on the radio. Hi, E.
Hi. What was his name?
Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
847, notices Sam says, hi, Esmeralda. It's good to hear you. We miss you.
Aw. So there you go. Me too.
Yeah. All right. You miss you?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the, you gotta go back. Now, Tom, you're a John Woo fan, obviously.
See, but again, these sound like the good ones.
They are great.
Like I told you, awesome. I watched Basic Instinct and Congo.
Now, here's
recently as well.
Here's the
so.
Thing. Basic Instinct is not a good movie.
Of course, no, yeah.
Not good.
I mean, Congo wasn't.
Congo's awesome. Hold on, we got to take a break. When we come back, we will discuss at length the genius of Congo.
That movie was ridiculous.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. Esmeralda's here, and we're going to play a round of For the Record, and you'll be here hanging out with all the regular features, too, on this Friday morning.
Somebody once told me the world is going to roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well,
it's disturbing to me that Esmeralda is singing word for word.
Yeah. V hates it.
Yeah, I can understand.
Yeah.
We were talking about Smash Mouth yesterday. And particularly talking about that SNL sketch where
Smash Mouth.
It's Nassim Pedrad. And every time the parents, do you remember who the parents were?
Brittany?
No, I don't think it was Brittany, but it was who the mother was whoever the guest was, whoever the host was. And I think Hader was Hader? No. Hader was the father, maybe?
Oh, I don't remember.
But Moynihan was the lead singer.
Bobby, yes. Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, because yeah. Because he's the only one
the
who
can
do
the bowling shirts
it.
With the soul patch.
Right.
Somebody want. They,
I mean, yeah, because he looks just like him and Guy Fieri, so that yeah. It works out.
Yeah. His Guy Fieri, by the way, is fantastic.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic. But no, that, so we were talking about that because we were talking about. What the hell were we talking about?
The love of Smash Mouth.
Oh, because they were in an episode of Scooby-Doo.
Oh, Scooby-Doo. We were talking about Scooby-Doo. 50th anniversary of Scooby-Doo.
Like the cartoon?
Yeah. 50th anniversary
and
of Scooby-Doo.
And they were in it.
Yeah. You know who else was in it? Who was it? Okay.
Are they doing new episodes of
Scooby-Doo? Oh, yeah. Scooby-Doo's been going for like 50 years.
Yeah.
Wait,
it still goes. You know, they make episodes. They make movies. It's still going.
I mean, I know the movie, but...
So, no, they're still going.
I didn't know
here were
the
some of the people.
Still.
Yeah, no, the cartoon, yeah. Not the stupid live-action movies, the cartoon.
Hey, now.
You're a rock star. So, Bobby Flay and Giada De Laurentiis were on...
Wow.
Were on Scooby-Doo. Who else?
Harlan Ellison.
Harlan Ellison, the science fiction writer.
The dude from... The Man from Another Place... Twin
who
Peaks.
Who is the little person in the red room in
the
Twin
guy
Peaks?
Oh, speaks backwards?
That guy, he was on...
Was he speaking backwards?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's...
And they
that.
Animate them to look like them.
Right.
And then, so Smash Mouth was on.
And it's not a Robert Smigel thing. That seems like it'd be a Robert
really,
Smigel.
It's really Scooby-Doo. It's really Scooby-Doo.
Where is it playing?
Well,
they do new series every few years. Like it's I think it's on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, Cartoon Network.
Like it's weird.
Yeah, oh no, it's totally
I didn't know
weird.
That it was still around.
So that's what we were talking about Scooby-Doo yesterday.
Smash Mouth. How did Smash Mouth look?
They look like Smash Mouth, man.
Somebody want?
Did they do the song?
No, they did a different. They did a different song. The clip that we played because we played a clip. But we were playing all the audio from these things. But yeah, I don't remember
how
who else was on the list.
Do
but
All
the, just
Star.
Like the weirdest collection of. Oh, Ricky Gervais was on as Ricky Gervais.
He okay?
Yeah.
I'm assuming these aren't. For, I mean, they are for children, but
yeah. But it's just that I think like,
it's mainly for the parents to be like, "Hey, look, it's like, Ricky Gervais."
Hey, Harlan Ellison.
I mean, you gotta get them kids into that sci-fi right now.
The little guy from Twin Peaks. What
Scooby? The writers for Scooby-Doo are doing an amazing service to the new generation.
Yes, by turning them on to Harlan Ellison
and
Twin Peaks. Yeah,
that's how I learned about the Harlem Globetrotters.
Well, that's different.
Is it?
Yeah. So anyway, Congo.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
That movie was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's completely and absolutely, utterly ridiculous. And I love it.
I mean, the fact that Bruce Campbell was in it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
That just adds to the genius of it. So, here's the thing, and this is my theory, and I've mentioned this before. Have you seen Congo, Tom? Tom? Oh, he's doing some audio work, apparently. here's the genius of my theory on Congo.
Yes.
John Patrick Shanley. Okay, who is a genius playwright, who has written, he wrote Moonstruck, he wrote and directed Joe versus the Volcano, and his plays are predominantly comedic, and he's a brilliant writer. He adapted the Michael Crichton novel Congo.
Okay.
He adapted it as a comedy. Everybody involved in the movie, except for Frank Marshall, who directed it, I'm convinced that everybody involved in the movie played it. They were convinced it was a comedy. Frank Marshall thought he was making an action movie, like a straight up action movie.
Yeah.
And the result is genius. I love it.
It was great. Stop eating my sesame cake.
Oh, it's the best.
I mean, Tim Curry.
Tim Curry, man. Delroy Lindo. Laura Linney. Put him on the endangered species list.
The gorillas themselves?
Amy the gorilla getting drunk, drinking martinis and smoking
a cigar.
It's the best.
That
it's
explains like, why Doubt teenager. Is so funny.
Yeah. Doubt is hilarious. No, but what I'm saying is that he's a brilliant writer, and he did that on purpose. Like, Congo was done on purpose. And I remember I put it on my top 10 list the year it came out.
Okay.
And I remember when I reviewed it on Roy's show, people were, you know, I was recommending it, and people were so mad because they went to see it, and they were like, what? And so I'm trying to be as straight up as possible. I'm like, this is a comedy. This movie is funny. Don't go in thinking you're going to see, like, a straight up Raiders of the Lost Ark thing.
Right. Even, I mean, just the cover and everything, you think it's going to be scary.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Not really.
And the way they advertised it and everything. And you go in there and you watch it, and you're 15 minutes into the movie, you're laughing your ass off. I was like,
right.
Okay. Now, Tom, did you see Congo? Have you seen Congo?
Yeah, because they added it to Amazon Prime, so I got the chance to watch it.
Yeah, that's
it.
And, how we watched it.
And I was just like, well, this is exactly how Nick described it.
Yeah.
I was having a great time, that's because my expectations were tempered.
Yeah.
I knew what I was getting into.
It's a blast. It's a total blast.
Also, why did no one believe that gorillas could be dangerous?
Right.
They're like, but they're so kind. It's like, what?
They can tear,
since when?
Tear your arms off.
Furious George.
Yeah. Okay, hang on, Esmeralda, hang on. We got a break here for the news, and then more Esmeralda Leon, and we got our regular Friday features coming up, and For the Record with Slap Slaply. All right here on WGN.
Never end. All the things that I used to say, all the words that got in the way, all the things that I used to know have gone out the window. All the things that she used to bring, all the songs that she used to sing, all the favorite TV shows have gone out the window.
Yeah. That's my guilty pleasure right there, Esmeralda.
Sugar Ray?
Not in general. That song specifically.
Oh, okay.
I love that song. And that Sugar Ray came up because if you're going to talk about Smash Mouth, you're going to talk about Sugar
that
Ray.
That is true.
So
I'm sure they toured together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they're buddies. They were bunking together. But I love that song. I do. And I know it's ridiculous, but I love it. We were talking about how funny Mark McGrath is, and I think you know this already.
What's that?
He's the champ of Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
That sounds like some, yeah,
because that was on VH1, so I thought for sure you watched it.
I think I did. I don't remember. It's
but
been
he
a
was
while.
He was the champ, like the celebrity champ of Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
He is. I enjoy him.
I do too.
I like that he makes fun of himself, and I mean even they had that album 1459,
right?
Which
right.
is, you know, the 15 minutes. So
yeah.
It's like, good for you.
And
realize.
And also, he was on...
Extra?
Celebrity. He was on Celebrity Big Brother.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh.
He was great. I was rooting for him. God, speaking of Big Brother, oh, man, it's almost over.
Is that good or bad?
Well, it ends Wednesday, and there's only one person I'm rooting. It's down to three people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just mad about two of them, because I hate them. But there's one guy who's in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, a complete a-hole. But he's
good TV,
but,
right?
But the thing is, he's winning all the competitions and he's playing a really good game. So I got to tip my hat to him. But he's a jerk. I can't stand him. And his girlfriend is with him.
Oh.
And they're like, no, they're a showmance. They met in the house.
Oh,
so
okay.
They call it a showmance.
Oh, right.
And then the person that's on the outside is this cute little girl named Nicole, who I just think is adorable. And I'm so rooting for her to win. And she was like an underdog. Like, everybody, you know, everybody really underestimated, right, Tom? Everybody really underestimated.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's like little skinny girl with glasses. Mm-hmm. She's like in her 20s. She's like
very bookish.
Very, very dork, kind of a dorky.
How do you even win?
Well, you got to play the game, man. You got to lie. You got to win competitions, like physical competitions and mental competitions.
Okay. People don't vote out and stuff?
No, the house themselves vote. Nobody, you know, it's not like you can be the audience isn't a part of it.
Right.
It's the people in the house. They vote to who gets evicted.
Do these three have to vote?
Well, here's the deal. They're down to the three.
Uh-huh.
So there's one more episode where they get down, and it's the finale. On finale night, they have all three, and it's live. It's 2 hours long. So they eliminate one, and then they're down to the final two. And then all of the jury, because the people who get kicked out, they go to the jury house. And then they come back on finale night and they vote for who they think should win.
Oh, so I mean, they're not going to vote for the jerk.
They might because he's great at the game.
Yeah, but so, if he's a jerk.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so I don't know.
Vote against him just to spite
him. That's the thing. People do that. They have done that in the past. But for the most part, even if you're a jerk, the people in the house who have been in the house with you go, well... He played the game great. He deserved it.
I'm a fan of.
But here's the one thing.
Voting
that
out of spite.
I'm with you completely. I'm with you completely. But here's the one thing, Tom, and I know that this is going to happen. Nicole's going to get the $25,000 for America's Favorite.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it. There's no question about it.
Oh,
and I like that they have that.
Nice.
Yeah, because you get $25,000 because the winner gets $500,000.
Yeah.
And then the second place person gets $50,000. And then the America's Favorite gets $25,000. And so that's a nice chunk of change for
Nicole. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. And she's clearly going to get it. If she doesn't get it, I'm going to put my foot through the TV. Because there's nobody as likable as her. There was nobody. This was a tough one to get through because at the beginning, for like the first 4 weeks, I thought everybody was an a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. There was like nobody.
Even her?
I didn't. She didn't. She did not show much personality, I will say, until later on. She was under the radar. She played a smart game. But I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the finale. Canadian Bill.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Canadian
Bill?
Yeah. He says, "Hi, welcome back, Esmeralda. Always great to hear you. By the way, the Smash Mouth sketch was Jennifer Lopez was the mom.
Oh.
And Sudeikis was the dad.
Oh. Yeah, then, okay.
Yeah. And I was telling you off the air, speaking of Jennifer Lopez, Hustlers is terrific. Like, the biggest surprise of the year. I'm not kidding. I went in with the lowest expectations possible, mm-hmm. and I'm not a J-Lo fan by any stretch of the imagination. It was really great.
Yeah, aren't people, you know, giving her Oscar buzz and all that, do you think?
No, I don't think that's, you know, it's just going to be so crowded once, you know, a bunch of movies get released.
Right.
I think that people are going to kind of forget about that, about Hustlers, which mm-hmm. is too bad. Actually, the lead in the movie, but the actual lead is Constance Wu. She's the lead, and she's great.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie. Like, I was like, wow. When it was over, I was like, whoa.
You know, you just kept doing that?
Yeah, though? I was just like, for 15 minutes, whoa, whoa. My parents are like, what the hell is wrong with you? I'm just going, whoa. Tom, you know who executive produced it? I did not know this until the final credits.
Who?
Will Ferrell and Adam McKay.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, that's got to be one of the last things that they did together before they went their separate ways, production-wise.
They broke up Gary Sanchez. But at the beginning of the movie, the logo for the Gary Sanchez, which is the gun pouring the coffee and the gun on the plate, that's their logo, the production logo. It said Gloria Sanchez. So I think they purposely changed it because it was a female-driven movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they changed it. And I didn't even put that together until the end when they said executive producers Will Ferrell and Adam McKay. But it's a great movie. You should check it out.
It's nice. Yeah, I've been wanting to see it.
Have you gone to a movie?
No.
No? You watch Congo at home?
Yeah. Just over and over again.
Over and over again. Just watch Congo for 24 hours.
No, I mean, we have all the darn movie sites, so...
Yeah.
Gotta watch them.
Gotta
get my $7 worth out of that Hulu.
I'm trying to think of if there's anything Netflix related. Oh. Now you know coming to Netflix in three
Seinfeld.
Weeks. Seinfeld. Oh. Yeah. That's
right?
That's 2021.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
it's in a whole another year.
Goodness.
But here's the thing, though. You familiar with Rudy Ray Moore, right?
No. What's that?
You don't know Dolemite?
Yes.
Okay, Dolemite.
Yeah.
All right. The blaxploitation movie from the 70s.
Okay.
So that's Rudy Ray Moore played Dolemite.
Yeah.
Created the character. You know, I'm Dolemite.
Wait, is that on Netflix?
Well, wait a minute now. Let me give you even more of a treat here. They did a biopic on Rudy
right.
Ray Moore.
No,
Eddie Murphy is playing Rudy Ray Moore.
I've seen the trailer for that.
Oh.
Is it's on Netflix?
It's Netflix, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dolemite is my name.
See, what do I got to go to the movie theater for?
Keegan-Michael Key is in it. Wesley Snipes.
Yes.
It looks before you watch that movie, you got to mm-hmm. watch Dolemite. At least you got to watch Dolemite, and I would recommend Dolemite, Human Tornado, and Disco Godfather.
Funny enough, I have a VHS of Human Tornado.
Wow. Can you please bring it in so I can see it?
Someone gave it to me and it was some like joke gift,
yeah, well, sure. Did you watch it?
Thing. No, because I don't have a VHS.
Oh, you don't. Oh, it's VHS. Okay.
Yeah, it's VHS.
Yeah. Well, these movies are amazing. Petey Wheatstraw, the Devil's Son-in-Law. That's another one.
Mm-hmm.
But Human Tornado and Dolemite. You got to see both of those, especially the original Dolemite, because the movie is about the making of that.
Okay.
But like Disco Godfather is fantastic. He plays a DJ at a disco, and there's one part where a guy ODs.
Uh-huh.
On the disco floor
starts
going nuts and spitting up and stuff. And he's screaming into the mic. Rudy Ray Moore's up there screaming into the mic. Well, he's up there while they're dancing. He's going, put your weight on it. Put your weight on it. While they're dancing because he wants people to put their weight on it, I guess. But he's screaming, put your weight on it. Put your weight on it.
Is that man is having a seizure?
No, the man has a seizure and says, and he screams into the microphone. He goes, oh, no. Call an ambulance and tell me what he has had.
Oh, my God. I thought put your weight on it was to help the man
out. No. That was for dancing. That was like, hey, put your weight on it. Put your weight on it. But then, like, call an ambulance and tell me what he has had.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, watch Dolemite.
Yeah.
And then this is the perfect role
mm-hmm.
for Eddie Murphy at his age now and the perfect comeback for him because he hasn't done really anything good in a long time. I think Dreamgirls was the last thing where he got like a lot of you know, a lot of acclaim for, and he was really good. He's actually the only good thing in that movie, but except for Jennifer Hudson, she's awesome. But this movie, this Dolomite Is My Name, I'm way beyond excited. Yeah. So it's Netflix, and I think it's October 8th.
Okay. So, well, hopefully Netflix has Dolomite.
Yeah, if not, you can find it.
Where do you find them?
I think you can find Dolomite, right? Tom, you can find Dolomite.
Yeah, I actually just I just picked it up on Blu-ray. You can get it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I think they did remasters of Dolomite, Human Tornado, and Petey Wheatstraw.
Okay. Oh, okay.
No Disco Godfather?
I think they did. They probably did Disco Godfather.
I mean, if they did Petey Wheatstraw's Devil's Son-in-Law, they
now, hold
do
on.
Disco.
Is it Petey Wheatstraw colon the devil's son-in-law?
Yeah,
yeah, it's okay. Awesome.
Yeah,
cool. He's born at like 11 years old.
Yeah. No, you got to see these movies, Esmeralda. Okay. You will lose your mind.
Yeah.
The Rudy Ray Moore movies are very special.
Okay.
And I was lucky enough to see them in the theater. I was old enough to actually see them downtown in the grindhouses, you know, with an all-black audience.
Yeah.
And it's some of my favorite. Like, I saw all the blaxploitation films and all the horror movies back in the 70s in the Loop. 90% of the time, my dad and I were among maybe five white people in the theater, and it was spectacular. It was just spectacular in a packed theater. And, you know, I know it sounds like a stereotype, but people screaming back at the screen, especially in horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, yelling back at the screen and watching blaxploitation movies with an audience that's entirely African American is fantastic, especially back in the 70s. Truly, some of my favorite memories of going to movies is sitting in an audience full of African Americans going nuts during a blaxploitation movie. And I remember.
Put the weight on it.
Oh, there it is. He says, "Put your weight on it," like 90 times. Like during the whole song, put your weight on it.
Yeah, I was thinking he was going to do it to the music.
No,
but he's just yelling
it's
just
at him screaming. Rudy
like
Ray
he's
Moore
yelling
screaming.
At specific people.
And he did stand up where all he did was just like rhyme stuff. He was like, he was like the Dr. Seuss of pimps.
Okay, all right.
Like one of my favorite lines, I can't actually say it, but there's a line. Mm. There's a line in Dolomite where the man, the white guys are trying to hassle him, the authorities.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can see a boom mic come down a bunch of times during
the course of
the movie.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
So they come up to him and they're trying to stop him. He goes, you better step out my way and let me pass before I stick my, before I stick my hush puppy up your ass. It's one of my favorite. He rhymes a bunch of. That's what Dolomite does.
A hush puppy. Oh, like
his shoes.
Shoe.
He wore
oh, right. Hush puppies.
Yeah.
I also love
the fact. I also love the detail that Dolomite wore hush puppies.
I mean, man.
I like that he calls it out. He's very proud of his hush puppies.
Hey, so am I.
So seriously though, watch Dolomite.
Okay.
And then the Eddie Murphy movie. You'll enjoy it much more. And I think you'll enjoy it if you don't see Dolomite. Because I think from what I can tell by the people who wrote Ed Wood, they wrote the People versus Larry Flint. They specialize in writing stories about real people at a certain time. Like,
but it's always good to have the the background and the context.
So you got the Netflix, you got the Hulu. Did you watch
Amazon Prime?
Did you finish watching? Did you watch Handmaid's Tale? Can you watch Handmaid's Tale?
No,
I didn't think so.
Depressing.
I didn't think so. If you can't watch Training Day and you can't watch The Wire,
I live that.
You can, oh God.
So yeah,
here's the most insane thing ever. Is I get a text about a year ago from Patty Vasquez, who used to work here. She texted me that she watched both seasons of The Handmaid's Tale back to back nonstop. I was like, and I texted her back. I said, "Are you insane?
What the hell
is wrong with you?" Because after the first episode of Handmaid's Tale, season one. Episode one, I was traumatized, and I'm not a woman. You know what I mean? I can't imagine what it would be like to be a woman and watch that show. And it's just, I can't believe she did that. I was like, are you nuts? I needed a break. I needed to watch The Three Stooges or something afterwards. I needed a palate cleanser.
Ugh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I can't watch The Wire either.
Yeah, if you can't watch The Wire.
I watched like two episodes, and I'm like, I can't deal with this. It's too real. Yeah, it's so real.
It is. All right. By the way, if you guys want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. We got a lot more to talk about. And after the 3 o'clock news, I believe Slap Slaply will be here. and we will bust into a little For the Record.
Is this playing on Wacker right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they put a special landing strip down the middle of Wacker.
There's the little there's a guy down there
with the flashlights.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
just waiting, wearing the reflective jacket. He's outside, right on Wacker, right on right below
of course.
Here.
He lives in one of those bridge
he does.
Houses.
He lives in
He's only here for Slap Slaply. That's it.
But otherwise, he just stays in the bridge house.
Yeah, you know, just in case.
Sleeps in the bridge house. I'll be in my bridge house, waiting for my turn to use my flashlights. All right, hang on, Esmeralda. All right, Esmeralda Leon is here, and we'll take a break and be back after this. Do I have to read something? No, I don't. Here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are coming up straight out of context. We got no Nick D Spies this week, but we've got Vic's Picks, and we've got Fly Jams Friday, and You Big Dummy. You get to vote on a dummy, Esmeralda.
Yay!
All right. So, now you were trying to think of something?
Resident Evil.
The movie you were trying to think of, Resident
yeah,
Evil?
Yeah, that's what I went to go see, and people were yelling at the screen.
Because I was telling Esmeralda about some of the experiences I had in the downtown grindhouses with very vocal audiences.
Yeah, it was at that theater on that's gone now on North and Wells. What was that?
Oh God, the Piper's Alley.
No, the other one. Remember, it was right next to but across the street from that school. Is that Wells? No, Clark and North. There used to be a movie theater over there.
Clark and North and Clark.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on the name of that theater?
Oh, it's gone.
By the
it's
way,
been gone for years.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. North and Clark.
Right, that's Clark. Yeah, and it's across from that school, or was.
Not the Adelphi, no.
No, I don't remember the name, but I remember it was a garbage theater. It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
It was a cheapy.
It's also not a good movie.
Was it the first one?
No.
You didn't like it?
No. I hate those movies.
I own three of them, and I hate them, but I still watch them from time to time.
Oh, God.
I did not mind that first one.
There's only one movie based on a video game that I liked, because every movie based on a video game sucks. The Resident Evil movies suck. What is it? Super Mario Super Mario Brothers?
Oh, come on.
I know. Bob Hoskins is in it. I love Bob Hoskins. Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo. That's believable as brothers.
And what's his face?
What?
He's Koopa.
Koopa?
Who? He passed.
Peter Fonda?
No.
Dennis Hopper?
Yeah.
Oh, Dennis Hopper.
And he's got like lizard. I think he had like lizard.
Oh, that's right. That's
lizard
right.
Lizard skin.
I know you like
something.
Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Street Fighter with, because Raul Julia. That was
Street
his
Fighter,
last movie.
I love Street Fighter. Mortal Kombat.
Get down here.
Oh, it's the best. Both of them.
Mortal Kombat, I don't mind Mortal Kombat. That one's okay.
The second one's terrible. I got 5 minutes in and I couldn't watch.
The first one, we saw that movie. My buddies and I saw it at a drive-in, which is like the perfect place to see it. And we had I remember having a really good time.
Yeah, that first one's great.
But the only movie based on a video game that I like legitimately like, I don't understand it.
Mm.
It's like one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen. I don't play any of the video games, so I don't know. I'm not a gamer at all, so I don't know if they're faithful to the games or any of that stuff. But the only one that I liked was Silent Hill.
Oh, that I don't know.
Silent
Hill.
It
was too scary.
It's really creepy and really good.
Yeah.
And so that's the only one.
Yeah, so. I haven't seen it or played the game. Too scary. Resident Evil was scary as a video game for me as well.
A lot of people think that too.
Yeah. There's a lot of noises.
Yeah. A lot of things around the corner. And
yeah. It was too much.
We had somebody call in with the name of that theater, right?
Yeah. Apparently it was the Village Theater.
That's it.
Oh, That's the most simple name ever.
That's coming to us from John.
Yeah, that's it. It's the Village Theater.
Yeah,
that's
what it was. Yeah, it was.
It was right next to an all-night diner. Right next to an all-night diner.
Yeah. Which is, it's a diner, but it's gone.
Yeah.
Like the 24 hours.
That's right. By the way, a Dolomite quote was, "At the age of 10, I was drinking whiskey and gin. At the age of 12, I was eating the bottles they came in."
Wow. Okay.
He's a poet, man. He's a poet laureate. So, Yeah, you got to get into some Dolomite.
I have to see. Yeah, I'll have to watch it.
I'm surprised. Have you asked V about Dolomite?
I don't think he's seen any of them.
Come on now. He hasn't?
I don't think he has.
Oh, that surprises me.
He's a very, you know, versed in movies.
He is.
Yeah, there's a few where it's like, what?
No, he's got to know Dolomite.
I mean, he knows about it, but I don't think he's seen him.
Okay. Well, you have to remedy that situation.
I'll ask.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, that movie with Eddie Murphy is going to be great.
Right.
I'm really looking forward to it. You know that they're making a sequel to Coming to America?
It's a sequel?
Yeah. They got Arsenio Hall. They got Eddie Murphy. They got John Amos.
You know what? That's better than a remake.
I
think.
But the plot is he comes back to America because he finds out that he has a son, a grown son. And he wants to reunite with him.
Well, now I'm like, what were you doing?
I don't know. But that's the plot that I heard.
Interesting.
And I'm still like, I don't know. The first one, I'm not a huge fan of the first one. I like the...
Really? You didn't like it?
Nah, not overall, I'm not really. Mm. But I like the barbershop scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And sexual chocolate is one of the greatest things ever. Yeah. When he drops that mic, sexual chocolate! Sexual chocolate! And then he drops the mic and walks out. He's really good. You're good and terrible. But yeah, that's coming out. But John Landis is not directing it. The guy who directed, Craig Brewer, who directed Hustle and Flow,
mm-hmm.
and Black Snake Moan, and the Dolomite movie,
okay,
is directing this one.
So do you have any expectations?
Not really. And again, I'm not a huge fan of the first one.
Right.
So, but I do like the sexual chocolate scene, which is just...
So if it was all... sexual chocolate, see that?
From the character that says sexual chocolate,
couldn't tell you
because they introduce him. They got that clip is on YouTube. If you just like YouTube, Coming to America, sexual chocolate. It's hilarious, but Arsenio Hall introduces him, and I can't remember the character's name because it's Eddie Murphy under makeup.
Yeah,
and
because Randy Watson.
That's it, Randy Watson.
Wow,
sexual chocolate.
I just noticed the Soul Glow.
Yeah, that's pretty funny too. Eric LaSalle. Eric LaSalle leaving stains on couches and stuff.
I saw him at a bar downtown once.
Eric LaSalle?
Because he was in some Chicago show.
Well, ER takes place in Chicago.
No. I was like a child when that came out.
Oh.
Recently. He's in something.
He's in one of those Chicago shows?
Yeah.
One of those Dick Wolf Chicago shows?
He is, or whatever. Okay. But he was at a bar hanging out.
Eric LaSalle.
Like, oh, look, it's Eric LaSalle.
I just remember him from... ER.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the only thing that I remember yeah, yeah. him from. And actually Coming to America.
Yes.
Because of the Jerry Curl stain.
That's about it.
And this whole family's got Jerry Curl, and they get up from the couch and there's stains. I'm like, you know, maybe that movie's funnier than I thought it was.
You should give it a watch.
Here. Drops the mic and walks up. That is hilarious. That scene kills me every time. Okay.
This man was my reverend.
Yeah. Reggie Watson. Sexual chocolate! All right. We're going to take a break here for the news. And then after the news, we're going to bust into a round of For the Record. Slap Slaply has landed. I can see him.
The guy's still out there with the flashlights?
Yeah, he's out there. They just landed. So, all right. Esmeralda Leon is here. We'll break. The news is up after this. Doesn't this play throughout the entire time while you're playing the game?
Does it?
It's been a while since I played the original Mortal Kombat.
I don't think
so. No? It's definitely like in the beginning.
Yeah.
Through the movie.
Yeah, they play it every time there's a fight scene. By the way, let's say hello to Vic. Esmeralda, I know you said hello to him off the air, but let's... Vic, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I...
And say hello to Esmeralda.
Was that house music?
He's learning about music.
I'm curious.
He's learning about music.
I don't know what that is.
It'll be on your top 10 of your 100 greatest albums list.
Esmeralda's here, Vic.
Yeah, I did. I gave her a big old hug when I saw her, and it's awesome. It's always awesome to see her.
I tried back. To do the walking
was that
down
the stairs.
No. Oh,
was that what you...
Yeah, but I have bad knees, so I can't. I couldn't go too far. I was like, bad knees, nope.
We are going to hear what Vic is listening to. Coming up after 3:30 with Vic's Picks.
Not house.
It's not House.
Not Mortal Kombat not soundtrack?
We are in the birthplace of House, I believe, right? Chicago?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
so I don't want to diss it, but yeah. Not my thing.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Vic, and we'll find out what music he's been listening to as we return here. All right. Okay. So are you ready for some For the Record?
Yeah.
For the Record.
Absolutely.
Is a music trivia quiz, and we like to take that when Esmeralda is here, and it's between Esmeralda and myself. And look who just walked in. It's our British friend Slap Slaply. Hi, Slap.
Is that whole orchestra that follows him around?
Yeah,
it's
they were on the jet with him. Hi, Slap.
Hello, everyone. Yes. Oh, sorry about that.
You all right?
I'm very excited.
Okay.
Ooh.
Good. There he is. Slap Slaply is our host for the Record.
Yeah.
Slap, are you ready to quiz us?
I'm as ready as I'm ever going to be.
Okay. So, Esmeralda, you will be asked a question first.
Okay.
And then I will be asked a question second.
Yes.
Then you will be asked a question third.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth.
Okay.
In round one. And then in round two, we start with me getting a question first.
Got it.
All right. And whoever wins this wins a boat.
Uh-huh.
And you get to hang out with let's see, I gotta pick a zombie. We always have to hang out with a zombie,
yes,
right?
I've
always wanted to hang out with zombie Margaret Thatcher.
Wow.
Why would you want to hang out with
so I could send her back to the grave?
I was gonna say, as a Brit, do you really want to hang out with Margaret Thatcher? Oh, you know what? We'll hang out with zombie Eddie Money.
There you go.
And we lost another one of the
zombie Rick
Ocasek.
Okay.
Yeah. So zombie Rick Ocasek. Well, we can't be a boat. We have to be in a car with zombie Rick Ocasek. So is
it could be a car, one of those cars that turns into a boat.
Right. Well, the band is called The Cars. So
I know, but it'd be one of those cars that you can drive
into a boat.
Yeah, one of those duck tour boats.
Right. All right. So that's
genius.
What it is. That's what
absolute
it is.
Genius.
And plus $6,000. I don't know. All right.
Oh, good.
All right, so for the first question here, go ahead, Slap.
All right, Esmeralda Leon,
mm-hmm.
Your first category is the 80s.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
All right, what was the Bangles' biggest hit? Was it Manic Monday, Walk Like an Egyptian, If She Knew What She Wants, or Hazy Shade of Winter?
All good songs, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I'm like.
But which one was the biggest hit?
Walk Like an Egyptian.
That is correct.
That would have been my guess, too.
I was going to say.
Very good.
But I like all those songs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bangles were good.
Hazy
Shade of Winter is a Simon and Garfunkel song. That's a cover.
Okay. But Manic Monday was written by Prince, right?
Yeah, Prince wrote Manic Monday. And Hazy Shade of Winter is a Simon and Garfunkel cover, which was featured in a terrible movie called Less Than Zero.
Oh,
I
didn't like
movie.
That movie.
It's a terrible movie, but Robert Downey Jr. is really good in it.
Yeah. Well,
because he was going through that at the time.
Say, it's being hopped up on drugs.
Yep. All right, Esmeralda, you got one. All
Yay.
Right. Okay, Slap.
All right, Nick. What country star?
This is the 90s.
Country.
Okay.
What country star had a huge pop hit with Please Remember Me? Let's see.
No idea.
Let's see. Was it Tim McGraw? Garth Brooks, Mark Chestnut, or Brent Viger?
Mark Chestnut?
I'm going to go, who was the first one?
Tim McGraw.
I'm going to go Tim McGraw.
Very good. That is correct. Right. Tim McGraw.
Please remember, I've never heard that song.
I don't know.
Not a big country fan.
Well, but it was a pop hit.
Country pop.
Well, that's what,
country
pop. Country pop.
Well, that's what happened to country in the 90s.
Oh, that's true.
It wasn't country anymore.
God bless Shania Twain.
God. All right.
Well, all right.
We're tied.
Tied here. All right. Esmeralda, real name is the category.
Oh.
What is Spinal Tap's David St. Hubbins' real name?
I can't believe that this is a question.
You keep quiet. All right, Esmeralda.
I've never seen Spinal Tap.
Oh.
I know.
Is it Jeremiah David Blair III, Michael McKean, Aaron Foss, or Isaac Coleman?
Wait, what's his real name?
What is David St. Hubbins' real name?
So are they asking his real name in the movie, or are they asking who played?
The real name in the movie, I'm
pretty
sure. Okay. Well, it's not Michael McKean. Okay, oh, I can. Well,
just say Michael McKean.
Michael McKean.
That's correct.
All right, okay. So okay, that's the real guy. That is a terribly worded question, by the way.
Because he could have had
No, he did, in fact. I don't remember what it was, but yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
You got it anyway.
Come on,
got
for it. The record.
All right.
Sort it out.
All right.
All right, Nick, you're on stage.
I don't like it.
another country question.
Oh, come on, man.
Here we go. In 1999, who was voted as country's favorite new artist at the American Music Awards?
New artist, 1999.
Country's favorite new artist in 1999 at the American Music Awards.
All right.
Was it Kentucky Headhunters, Diamond Rio, Faith Hill, or the Dixie Chicks?
Hmm.
Okay. Let's see. Dixie Chicks made all that noise in 2003 when we were in Iraq the first time. That gives them enough time to have been established. I'm going to say the Dixie Chicks.
That is correct.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah, because I think Faith Hill was...
She was established.
She'd been around,
Yeah.
And I don't know who the Kentucky Headhunters...
Those are real. It's a real band.
It's a real band?
Yeah, it's a real band.
They played my wedding.
So you know them well.
Yeah, the missus loves them.
Good. All right, we're tied at two.
Tied here.
All right.
I don't think that's ever happened.
This is a dead heat.
Yeah. Which was a terrible movie with Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo.
I mean, Joe Piscopo.
Hey, man, he was in my wedding.
Yeah, okay. Was he serving?
Drinks?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Ring bearer, actually.
Good Lord.
One hit wonder.
Oh!
All right. In 1991, what vocal group saw their hit Written All Over Your Face peak at number 16?
Well, that's not a one-hit wonder.
Oh, that's right. According to
Esmeralda, at least top 10.
It has to be at least top 10 or it's
least.
Not a hit.
Okay. All right.
All right. What
was it? The Rude Boys, Right Said Fred, Boys to Men, or Dusty Drapes and the Blinds?
What was the name of the song?
Written All Over Your Face.
Right Said Fred, Boys to Men. What was the first one?
Rude Boys.
I'm going to go Rude Boys.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Right Said Fred, man.
Yeah, they had I'm Too Sexy.
I'm Too Sexy.
That couldn't have been.
No.
That had to have been at least top five.
Boys to Men, one hit?
Yeah, no. They're no.
What? All right.
Hitting me.
Oh, all right. Nick, you're in the mosh pit.
Okay, and this is the last question of the round, right?
Last question of the round.
All right. You're ahead, 3-2.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. This 80s MTV and concert favorite had hits like Gimme All Your Lovin' and Legs. Who are they?
Come on.
Was it Rod Stewart, Van Halen?
Well, Rod Stewart had a song called Hot Legs.
Mm.
He did. Okay, sorry, go ahead. Van Halen. Yeah.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Or ZZ Top.
That would be ZZ Top.
That is correct.
Wow. That was a tight round right there. 3-3. It's written down right here,
how,
so you know.
How will we ever fix it?
You know it's real.
We're so good at music.
Yeah. The Kentucky Headhunters.
They played at Slap's wedding.
They played at Slap's wedding there. Well, Joe Piscopo was taking everybody's orders.
Oh, poor Joe Piscopo.
What do you mean, poor Joe Piscopo? I interviewed Joe Piscopo one
time.
I have to say this.
Is he nice?
Truly one of the nicest guys I've ever interviewed. I'm
so
not
now
kidding.
I even feel worse.
No, and I felt terrible, too, because before the interview, I was like, who the hell wants to interview Joe Piscopo? He was in town. He was in town to MC like a benefit, and I was
right.
like, "Okay, well, I'll definitely interview him because it's for a really good cause."
Yeah,
and I was like, "I just won't bring up how much I don't like him very much."
I mean, that's good.
I thought he was funny on SNL with Eddie Murphy. I thought they were both really funny on SNL, and then nothing after that.
Right.
And then the whole like he turned into a muscle bound unfunny dude, and so anyway, so I interviewed him. I'm telling you, man. He was truly one of the nicest guys I've ever interviewed, and it was. I felt really guilty. Like after the interview, like, man, that was one of the best interviews. One of the nicest guys I've ever interviewed in my life. So he's a really, really sweet guy. Yeah. And I felt, you know, I felt that way when I sat in an interview with Roy Leonard with director Joel Schumacher,
mm-hmm.
who's responsible.
You don't like Joel Schumacher?
He's one of the worst filmmakers of all time. Wow. He did The Lost Boys. He did.
He did the Batman with the nipples.
He did two of the Batman with nipples movies. St. Elmo's Fire. I mean, he's responsible for really, really awful movies. And he was in town to promote Falling Down, the movie with Michael Douglas.
Mm.
And that's actually a movie I really like.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, we can interview him. And I was thinking to myself, man, I'm going to feel real bad interviewing this guy because I can't stand his movies. And I've used him as the bar of which to, you know, measure terrible movies.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a Joel Schumacher movie, it's terrible. So I end up meeting this guy in person. He comes in, one of the most charming guys I've ever met in my life. And when we finished the interview, he couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
I didn't bring up anything but Falling Down because I didn't want to talk about any of his other movies because I hate them all. So we finished the interview. He leaves, and I look at Roy, and I'm like, am I nuts, or was that like one of the nicest, like most charming people you've ever met? And as soon as he left, I realized how he got gigs because he could work a room. Like... He could come in with the worst script ever, and he would get it made. That's the only thing I can think of. He can get it made because he was charming. He could work a room. He was a real pro. So, Joel Schumacher.
Nice guy, terrible movies.
Yes. All right. Yeah! ZZ Top, man.
I just remember the videos.
Yeah, well, they were classic.
They're so good.
They were classic. And you got to love ZZ Top because it's two guys with big beards and a guy who doesn't have a beard, but his name is Beard. His name is Beard. So you got to love that. The guy who doesn't have a beard, his last name is Beard.
Do you think, I'm curious if the two guys who had beard or have beards, did they have beards when they met the guy with the last name Beard?
Maybe they
and
just,
then went,
maybe
should we get beards?
Yeah, that would be the way to go. So, well, ZZ Top, which was one of the answers of our For the Record, and we're in round two, and there's Slap. Slap's back.
Hello.
Where did you go, Slap?
I went to the break room.
Oh. Went to the break room.
Went to feast on Vic Vaughn's scraps.
Oh, wow.
He's a messy eater.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I went to feast on Vic Vaughn's scraps.
How much
was there? That sounds like a zombie movie.
Well, it's, I'm part zombie. My mom was a zombie.
That's true. That's why he's the one he's the hookup.
Oh, that's the hookup for our prizes, yeah.
For zombie prizes.
Speaking of zombies, I cannot wait for Zombieland 2.
When is it out?
Cannot wait. October.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only been 10 years. It only took them 10 years.
Yes, but, you know, from when I heard that they were making it, I didn't know.
And they got everybody back.
That's quick.
Everybody's back.
Oscar winners,
Oscar nominees. They weren't that before, and now they're all back.
Yeah, but I'm sure they had fun.
Abigail Breslin was an Oscar nominee, actually, when they made Zombieland. And so was Woody Harrelson at that point. But now they're all like, so is Jesse Eisenberg. And Emma won.
Right.
So, all right. Slap is back. Slap is back. We're tied at 3.
Yes.
The first question goes to me for round 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And it's a doozy. The 80s, what female group had a number one hit with a version of Venus? Was it Vixen, the Go-Go's, the Bangles, or Bananarama?
That was Bananarama.
Bananarama is correct.
What do you say?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I went back. I couldn't get the original version out of my head. Which is by a band called Shocking Blue. And I just kept thinking Shocking Blue, Shocking Blue, Shocking Blue in my head for some reason. Okay. All right. Next.
All right. Next up, the 90s.
Oh.
Oh, no. What was Natalie Merchant's smash hit debut album from 1995? Was it In My Tribe, Ophelia, Tiger Lily, or I'm a Maniac?
Tiger Lily.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Would you look at these two?
All right.
Woo!
4 for 4, both of us. All right.
Shocking.
What's next?
Next up, real name.
No.
Okay. See y'all later. this is your favorite song. What is the Lady in Red singer Chris DeBerg's birth name?
How the hell would anybody know Chris DeBerg's birth name?
Is it Christopher John Davidson? Donald Lee Robinette? Herschel Huckabuck Hammond.
Ooh, I hope it's that.
Or Christopher James Bernard.
Mm. I'll go with D.
That is incorrect.
Oh.
It was Christopher John Davidson.
Ah, the first one. It was either the first one or the fourth one. It wasn't Huckabee Sanders or whatever the hell.
Well, I'd be like, why would you change your name?
Yeah. All right.
All right. Esmeralda, you're on stage.
Oh.
You can take the lead here.
Take the lead. This one's for the lead. Oh, wow. What artist won a Grammy for 1981 Best Rock Vocal Performance, Male, with Jesse's Girl?
Oh.
Come on!
Was it? Oh, hold on. Let's
get Chris DeBerg's real name. And
wait,
you can...
what did he win?
He won Best Rock Vocal Performance, Male.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
1981. Okay. Well, let's hear the options.
Uh-huh.
Was it Morrissey? Sean Cassidy? Tom Petty? Or Rick Springfield?
Yeah. I'm going to go with that no name, Rick Springfield.
That is correct. Never heard of him.
I didn't know that he won?
Yeah. Why are you so surprised?
I just don't.
He rules. Rick Springfield rules. What the hell?
Don't think that Jesse's Girl was...
It was huge!
...that worthy.
It's great!
...of awards.
They should have given him all the awards for that.
I always thought that
he should have won. He should have won Best Actor for Hard to Hold. All right.
All right, Nick. One hit wonder.
No. All right.
What band had their only U.S. hit with Der Kommissar?
Oh, yes.
Was it Taco, Bow Wow Wow, Haircut 100, or After the Fire?
After the Fire.
That is correct.
I only know the Falco version.
Well, Falco's version is better, but they had it. After the Fire had a big hit with it. So, yep. All right.
Okay, Esmeralda, you're in the mosh pit.
Oh.
What band toured in 1990 to support the album Pump?
Pump. I just want to make sure because he's got Pump. That accent.
Oh, right.
Yeah. All Pump. Right. Yes.
I still don't know.
Was it The Cars, Aerosmith, The Rolling Stones, or Kiss?
Aerosmith.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big comeback album for them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, how many more do we got?
That's it.
That's it, Esmeralda, you won!
Did I win?
You won! Six to five.
This is the first time.
All because I didn't know Chris DeBerg's real name.
Eddie Money and who else?
Eddie Money and
Rico Casey.
Oh, yeah, here I go.
There you go. Woo. $6,000, too. Don't forget about the $6,000.
My duck tour.
Don't forget
car.
About your duck tour.
They drive on the road, and then they turn into a boat.
It's funny because, for after Raw on Monday nights, they had this show called, I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin, Get Out of My Face or something.
Yeah.
And it was a show with just one celebrity hanging out with Steve Austin for a half an hour. And one of them was one of the idiots from that, that show where they're playing pranks.
Impractical Jokers.
Impractical Jokers. Right, so Impractical Jokers, one of the idiots was there, and he was driving fast, Steve Austin's like, hell yeah, and he's driving real fast. And the guy's in the car kind of freaking out, and he drives right into a lake.
What? Oh,
drives
no.
right into a lake, but then the car turns into a boat. So he was driving, and meanwhile, Impractical Jokers guy is freaking out, like, hell yeah, it's a boat now!
Oh.
And it always ends with him having beers with whoever the guest is, smashing the beers. Yeah.
Give
me the hell yeah! And the one with Becky Lynch, who is right now like the top female performer in the WWE, and she's awesome, and she's got a fantastic Irish accent. She stone cold stuns Stone Cold Steve Austin. Pulls his own move on her. Boom! That's his finishing move. Stone Cold Steve Austin's finishing move is called the Stunner. You put somebody's head between your elbow, your bicep, and you put their hand, and then you fall down, and they bust their face on your... Yeah.
You don't bust your arm?
No, you bust the person's face.
Wow. Whoever.
So, anyway, Becky Lynch did a stunner. He went, hell yeah! All right, that's my Stone Cold Steve Austin, by the way. All right, we got a break for the news. Lady in red. What's his name? Christopher Samson Samuels?
It was like Huckman.
Huckabee Sanders?
Huck Finn.
Oh, my God.
What's his name? His, like,
Chris DeBerg.
Stage name.
You know who we can thank for that damn song? The TV show Family Ties. No. What? That's not right. That was some other one hit piece of crap song that they played on. What would you say if I told? What the hell was the name of that song?
What?
It was featured on Family Ties,
mm-hmm,
when Michael J. Fox and Tracy, his wife Tracy, they danced to it. They kind of met and they danced to it. And the band, the actual band who played the song, mm-hmm, was in the episode. And then the episode that was at the time, Family Ties was the highest rated show,
right,
on TV. And so the band, nobody knew who the band was. I think it was a band that Michael J. Fox liked, or one of the creators liked, one of the producers liked. They put him in. They played that song, whatever the hell it was, the Family Ties ballad, and it went to number one.
Interesting.
I can't remember what it was called, though. Does anybody remember what it was called?
Is it, are you talking about that song by Billy?
Yeah, Billy. Yeah.
I like that song.
What is Billy
that?
Ocean?
No.
Billy Vera.
Billy Vera. That's right, Billy Vera. And that was a one hit wonder, Billy, mm-hmm, Vera. And
yeah, that came out of nowhere too, that song.
From Family Ties.
How did it go, Vic?
It's awesome.
Oh, God.
It's awesome.
All right.
Is that on the top?
But I don't even, I can't remember the name of the song, though. But
what
it was like,
would you say if I said
blah, blah, blah,
at this moment?
At this moment. That's it.
So good.
Oh, God. All right, let's get to Vic's Picks. Hit the theme.
Albums. One Vic Vaughn. It's Vic's Picks on the Nick DeGilio Show.
I love that song, Band on the Run.
Has he listened to that one yet?
It's not in the top 100. People don't like Wings. It's ridiculous. I love Wings. I love them. And they get a bad rap.
My parents love Wings.
Well, that's because they're good. You know why? Because they're good. And I prefer Paul McCartney solo over John Lennon. There, I said it.
My mom, too, I think one day she goes, because Paul McCartney came up, and she's like, he was more popular than the other guy, wasn't he? I was like, yeah, Mom, he was. Paul McCartney was, yeah.
All right. Well, Vic Vaughn has been educating himself musically, so he's been, mm-hmm, listening to every single album on the top 100 best albums list from Rolling Stone. Let's get to it, Vic. Where are we at?
We're at number 7, yes. Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones.
Yes.
This is their 10th studio album, right? Released in the UK. It's a double album, 18 songs, a little over an hour long, recorded from 69 to 1972. Now, I was listening to a Jim DeRogatis podcast to kind of, as part of my research for this album, longtime Chicago reporter DeRogatis.
Yeah.
He did an episode on this album, and I learned about Brian Jones. I'd never heard of Brian Jones before, so I'm glad I listened to that podcast. Because I knew about Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, but learning that Brian Jones was the founder. But I think it's important to mention because he died, I guess, right before they did this album. So So I thought that was notable. But anyway, listening to this album was a lot of fun because, as you know, I'm becoming a big Rolling Stones fan through this little journey that I started taking.
And
So, you know, they were at the height of their songwriting, their great songwriting, I guess, when this came out, from what I've read. And they started recording. They went into the recording studio, several studios. One, I like to mention the studios, one being Olympic Studios in London, but also Star Groves, which was Mick Jagger's country estate outside Greater London in Hampshire County. Then also at a villa that Keith Richards rented called Nelcote. Probably butchering that. But it's in the south of France,
and that's where they shot the documentary. I can't say the title of the movie.
Okay,
I can't say the title, but it's a documentary about the making of Exile. It's great.
Awesome.
It's
okay.
Great. Yeah,
that's on my homework list. Yeah. They also did some overdubbing and mixing at Sunset Studios in Los Angeles. Famous studio. Also wanted to mention, I found out while reading up on this, that this is interesting. The Swiss filmmaker and photographer who did the album work for Exile on Main Street, just passed away over the weekend.
Oh, is that right?
A couple days ago, Robert Frank. He was 94.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, it popped up on Google when I was researching this. So, but Exile on Main Street, widely considered a masterpiece of rock and roll. But let's start it with the leadoff track because you cannot skip it. I love this song, but we'll skip to the bridge because it's not all appropriate for on air.
Right,
but but the bridge is important in its own right because it's a notable departure from the rest of the song. It happens like right around 2 minutes, 12 seconds or so, and gets a little almost psychedelic. But Tom? Yeah, Rats Rocks Off.
Yeah,
released as a single in Japan, and that might be pretty high up there for me as in the conversation as being among the best opening songs for an album. Yeah, I know you talk about that. That's a segment
you do.
I would throw that one out there from what I've listened to over the last 6 months. I love that one. But this next one's about relationships and love and craps, dice, gambling. It's got some blues roots. Mick Jagger wrote it. And it's called Tumbling Dice. Peaked at number 7 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart, number 5 in the U.K. singles charts. I know we got to move quickly through these. So the next one is awesome. I love it. It's called Shine a Light. Gave its name to a 2008 Martin Scorsese film.
Yep.
About the Stones as well. Is that the one you were talking about earlier?
No.
No, different one. Okay.
No.
But sounds a little bit like church music in the beginning with the organ that they used. It's soft. It's really nice. And then it picks up right about here where Tom's going to play a cup for you. That's my favorite song on this album.
Wow.
You guys have one?
That's it. Tumbling Dice is my favorite on the album.
Oh, yeah. It's a great one. Yeah. That's a great one. I like the harp a lot, so I picked this last cut because Mick Jagger shows off his skills on the harp, which, from what I've read, he was very good at it. But he plays a little harp in this one. Let's wrap it up with Turd on the Run.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, this is widely considered to be the Rolling Stones' best album. If you were to ask, you know, most people, they would, and critics and musicians and stuff, they would pick Exile. And it's a great album. It's not my favorite. My favorite album is Sticky Fingers.
That's my favorite, too. Yeah. I get, like you, I get what they're saying, though. I mean, this one, it's 18 songs. It's a double album. And you know, when you read about everything that went into the, you know, making of this album, I could see why it's considered that, but I also like Sticky Fingers.
And Let It Bleed is way up there,
too. Oh, yeah, so, definitely.
So, all right, well, there you go, Exile, which is, you know, a strange record, too, because it's kind of all over the place. And it reflects, you know, what it was like, how long it took them to record it, and the different kind of stuff that they were going through at the time.
That's a good point.
But Exile on Main Street, considered one of the greatest albums ever. So, all right, cool. All right, Vic. Hang out for a minute. When we come back, we'll go to the next album on the Top 100. Don't move your head. Don't move your hand. Don't move your lip. Just shake your head. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline Studio 18 floors above beautiful downtown Chicago. The Friday features have begun, and we're going to bust into You Big Dummy coming up. We've got Straight Out of Context, no Nick D Show Spies this week, and then Fly Jams Friday. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And speaking of Vic Vaughn, we are in the middle of Vic's picks. We talked about the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. What's next, Vic?
Number six, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, the Prince of Motown, Prince of Soul. It's considered a groundbreaking Motown album by one of the greatest singers, one of the greatest artists of all time. From what I've read, that's no stretch to say about Marvin Gaye. For the most part, he wrote and arranged all these songs as well. We can go more into the man if we have time, the artist, but let's focus on the album for now, the studio work. It's Marvin Gaye's 11th studio album. Took about 7 months in the studio, spread out over 1970 and 71 at three studios in Detroit, Hitsville, USA, nicknamed for Motown's famous studio on Grand Boulevard. I had to read about all that. I didn't know any of that. But also at Golden World Records and United Sound Studios in Detroit, as well as the Sound Factory in Los Angeles, another very popular studio. Ton of great artists. I looked into that studio, recorded at the Sound Factory. But we have to start with the album's title track, regarded as being among the all-time great protest songs, What's Going On?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
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 Man, this whole album really just, I'd never listened to this album, although I knew a couple of them. That was one of them that I was familiar with. But it's beautiful, beautiful music, and very, you know, I mean, we could talk for a long time on the origins of that, just that one song, but I know we only have a couple minutes here, so, but just quickly, it was at least in part from the mind of Opie Benson. We should mention that, of the Four Tops. Long story there, but the roots of the song go back, obviously, to the Vietnam War, young men being sent off to die overseas. It was also aimed at shedding light on police brutality at the time. A lot of different conditions. This album is about a lot of the conditions that they were, you know, of the time, of the 70s there, or early 70s.
Yeah.
But yeah, the next song that I wanted to play was right after that. The next track, What's Happening, Brother, kind of picks up where that title track left off. So it's about a man coming back from Vietnam, about that transition from a war zone to civilian life again. Tom's got some of it.
Can't find no work, can't find no job, my friend. Money is tighter than it's ever been. Say, man, I just don't understand what's going on across this land. Oh, what's happening, brother? Yeah, what's happening? What's happening, brother?
Yeah, and Mercy, Mercy Me is a lovely song from this album, one of the ones I was familiar with.
This is my favorite song.
Yeah, mine too. It's beautiful. Tom?
Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north.
Yeah, I couldn't help but get a little sad when I was listening to this album about the way he ended up dying, you know, the way he was killed. I mean, it's because he's so talented. And I also learned that he started as a studio, like a session player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's you're talking top echelon musicians that are in this, that are session players. So I mean, the talent that this guy, and then also just reading about, just listening to him sing these songs, you can tell what a beautiful voice he had. And so I started digging into more about, you know, just the claim that he's one of the greatest singers on the planet. And so I came across this link where they isolated his vocals when he's singing that song with what's the one about the mountain? He's with Tammy Terrell.
Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Yeah, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. They isolate his vocals. It's ridiculously amazing how good that guy was. But, you know, we can wrap it up here with the album's closing track, Inner City Blues, because it kind of wraps up the album nicely. Ties back into the theme of the first song, What's Going On, and even what's the second one, What's Happening, Brother. Great track from a great album, but we can listen to Inner City Blues.
Bills pile up, sky high, send that boy off to die.
Yeah, it's great loss, man, to lose Marvin Gaye. You know, I learned posthumously inducted into the Rhythm and Blues Music Hall of Fame, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say one other thing. Motown is releasing a reissue of this album as a standalone of Marvin Gaye's only live performance of it. Apparently a legendary concert from May of 1972 in Washington, D.C. So for the first time ever, that live concert comes to vinyl. So I'm kind of excited about that. The album's called What's Going On Live, and it's due out next month, October 18th.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye was a special artist, and tragic the way it ended.
And
just unbelievable.
It is. I've read about it.
He had a big comeback hit right before he passed away, or right before he was killed. He had a big comeback hit called, 1983? Why am I thinking of it?
I can't help you.
It's the, oh, man. It's a song about sex.
Well, maybe it'll jog your memory
Let's Get It On?
No. It was 1983. No.
That's about sex, Tom? No.
Sexual healing?
Sexual healing.
So that came
Before his... Well, Sexual Healing was like a big comeback record. It sold millions of copies.
Man.
And then he... I think he was killed just like...
Wow.
Months after that song.
I had to go back and listen to a lot of his stuff because I also read that this album was this was like his first departure from... the kind of music that he was doing. Is that right?
Yeah. First time he got very political.
Into protest music. Right. Yeah. His manager said, why do you want to end your career?
Yeah. Okay. we got to hit the news here. So we'll get another round of Vic's Picks next week, but let's go to the news after this. Welcome back, everybody. Before we get to You Big Dummy, we were talking about Exile on Main Street, Vic.
Yeah.
And I said that Tumble and Dice was my favorite song on the album, and I made a mistake, because that is my favorite song on the album, and that's Happy. And I think the opening chords, whenever I hear the opening chords, it's my favorite opening of, it's one of my favorite openings of a song ever.
And so I'm laughing because when I heard it, I also thought that is an awesome guitar riff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I just, I adore that song, but I just wanted to make sure that...
the record is corrected.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to know what you thought of it.
I noticed it. And I also read a lot about Keith Richards in specifically for Exile on Main Street because there's a lot out there to read about his thoughts on getting the guitar right. There's some funny stories, you know. There was a lot of drugs going on.
Yeah.
And, they were basically sleeping during the day and recording all through
that's
the
night.
I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff about that album.
Try to track down the documentary. I told you the title. I told you the title of it off the air because I can't tell you the title of it on the air.
Yeah.
But it's a really great. It's really, really great. They really dive into what. How insane it was when they recorded that record.
I think once I get done with 100, which we're coming up close, probably around a month, I think I'll get into some of these documentaries.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. Anyway, so I just wanted to hear... basically, I was being greedy, and I wanted to hear the opening chords of Happy. That's basically it. All right. Oh, now we got this.
Here's the dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no. You big dummy. You dummy.
Ah, yes. Welcome back, everybody. And it's time for our regular Friday features to continue. And this is You Big Dummy. This is where we take real news stories of real people and we read them and they do real, real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Esmeralda, you're going to be our third vote.
Yay!
All right, so let's get to the dummies. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy number one. Two suspects are being penalized after they allegedly stole a life-size cutout of Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes and then crashed their getaway car. Lawrence police spokesman Patrick Compton says a man and a woman grabbed the cutout at a McDonald's restaurant on Monday. They ran out the door, they jumped in their car, and sped away. Officers investigating a nearby two-car accident saw the cutout in one of the vehicles. Compton said the vehicle also matched the description of the car that drove away from the McDonald's. The Lawrence Journal World reports the two were issued notices to appear for theft and were cited in the accident. One person was treated for minor injuries. The cutout of the popular Chiefs quarterback wasn't damaged, and it's back on display at the McDonald's.
Oh. I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period.
Dummy number two, dummy number two. A new Spanish-designed submarine has a weighty problem. The vessel is more than 70 tons too heavy, and officials fear if it goes out to sea, it will not be able to surface. A former Spanish official says the problem can be traced to a miscalculation. Someone apparently put a decimal point in the wrong place. It was a fatal mistake, who works for the defense ministry said. The Isaac Perel, the first in a new class of diesel-electric submarines, was nearly completed when engineers discovered the problem. A U.S. Navy contractor in Connecticut, Electric Boat, has signed a deal to help the Spanish defense ministry finish to slim down the 2,200-ton submarine. The agreement with Groton, which is a Connecticut-based electric boat company, calls for Spain to pay over $14 million for 3 years with the assessment of the problem with the S-80 program, the submarine program. Now the senior fellow with the Strategic Study Group, a think tank in Madrid, said officials will review options provided by Electric Boat, but he said the preference has been to extend the length of the submarine's hull, perhaps by 5 to 6 meters, to increase buoyancy. Otherwise, the weight of the submarine would have to be reduced. And he said the Spanish Navy would not be able to compromise features such as a combat system or air-independent propulsion system. The Isaac Perel was named after the 19th-century Spanish submarine designer. It's one of four vessels in the class that are in various stages of construction. The country has invested $2.7 billion in the program, and this was the first time that they had to redesign it. 70 tons too much because of a decimal point.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. Just Donna and me. And the dummy makes three.
Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Hey, by the way, as you guys know, if they were ever to make a movie about that that Spanish sub, I would like it.
You'd be first in line.
I would be first in line because, as everybody who knows, I love all submarine movies. Even if they make a movie about a submarine that's 70 tons too heavy because of a decimal point, I will still see it and love it because submarine movies rule. I'm a dummy. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. A California news reporter made an on-air slip-up after saying she reportedly tried to contact a man who died in a police chase, but he was, quote, unavailable for comment. Sarah Welch of KTLA was reporting in Anaheim when the TV station shared the clip while talking about Eluth Peloza Nava, 50, who was killed in a police chase by two officers. Welch mentioned trying to contact the deceased man. She said, "We reached out to the man who died in this pursuit. They were unavailable for comment." Sarah Welch was on air for KTLA when she said that he was killed by police and he was unavailable for comment. Well-known Twitter user and journalist Yashir Ali shared a clip of that moment. Ali said, "When I say I nearly passed out from laughing, I mean that." Since the initial post, the tweet has gained more than 57,000 likes, 13,000 retweets, and 15,000 comments. One user wrote, "So the psychic medium wasn't taking calls?" Another Twitter user joked that Nava was ghosting Welch after someone said he was ignoring her. Hold on a minute now. Hey, hold it.
All right.
I need to find that clip. Did you see the clip, Tom?
I did, yeah. Okay. It's as ridiculous as it sounds.
Can we? Because we had a break here for weather. When we come back after the weather and the break, can you have that audio just so we can wrap it up? All right. Let's take a break here for weather, and we'll come back, and we have a couple more dummies and vote, and we will do Straight Out of Context. No Nick D Spies this week, but keep your ears peeled. If somebody mentions me, jot it all down and send it in. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are in the middle of You Big Dummy. Esmeralda Leon is here. Hi, Esmeralda.
Hi.
Okay. Okay, before the break, I read dummy number three, and it is Sarah Welch from KTLA reporting in Anaheim on TV, where she said she tried to contact a man who died in a police chase, but he was, quote, unavailable for comment, and we did find the audio, so let's listen to this.
"We tried to reach out to the man who died in this pursuit. They were unavailable for comment." Michael, tried to reach out.
That's fantastic. Dummy number four, dummy number four, blah, 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 four. A man wearing a Captain America costume was arrested for burglary after a Mississippi homeowner caught the phony superhero breaking into a shed on his property, cops report. David Hobbs, where was Shaw? David Hobbs, 36, was collared early Monday morning as he allegedly tried to use a pipe to break into a shed at the rear of a residence in the city of Clarksdale. Hobbs was thwarted when an alarm alerted the homeowner of an attempted 3 a.m. burglary. The victim held Hobbs at gunpoint until police arrived. For some unknown reason, Hobbs was wearing a Captain America costume complete with mask. His outfit also included fairy wings. Captain America doesn't wear fairy wings, does he? His outfit included fairy wings, apparently for a quick getaway. Hobbs, sans costume, was locked up in the Camona County Jail, $25,000 bond. They photographed and handcuffed Hobbs while he sat on a bench in the police headquarters.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy. I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
Dummy number
number five, dummy number five, dummy number five.
A 30-year-old man was hospitalized Thursday after suffering a stab wound in the leg at home on Highland Avenue. Police later said that Philip Gagne accidentally stabbed himself, but tried to blame it on a man with whom he had been arguing. After investigating the matter further, police charged Gagne with filing a false report or alarm, a Class D misdemeanor. Lieutenant Scott Watkins from the Auburn Police said, "It was a great team effort. The officers, sergeants, and detectives did a great job in determining what really occurred. Friends of the injured man applied a tourniquet to stop the bleeding as rescue crews rushed to 37 Highland Avenue at 4 p.m. Gagne lives at the address. Police said that the injury did not appear to be life-threatening.
The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them. My only child is a dummy."
Okay. All right. We got to do a recap here, and we got to vote. We got a third vote, so we... and that's Esmeralda, so we're not going to need a call-in. All right, so let's do it. Here's the recap. We've got the dummies who stole a life-size cutout of quarterback Patrick Mahomes and then crashed the car. We have the dummies who were going to build a submarine that was 70 tons too heavy because of a misplaced decimal point. We got the dummy reporter who said that a dead man was unavailable for comment. We have the dummy who was dressed as Captain America charged with burglary. And we got the dummy who accidentally stabbed himself in the leg. All right. Dumb. Very dumb. Tom, dumb.
It's the KTLA lady. It's the that asked the dead man for comment.
Asked the dead man because
oh my god,
no, unavailable for comment.
Someone she thought of that. She put that in a script and said it.
Yeah.
So
and the audio is hilarious. So okay, the dummy reporter who said that the dead man was unavailable for comment. That's your vote. Okay. All right, I'm going to vote, and then Esmeralda, you're going to be the third vote. Mm. So, all right, I love the cardboard cutout story. My favorite part of that is that it was safely delivered back to the McDonald's. Quarterback Patrick Mahomes is now back in the lobby of the McDonald's as a cardboard cutout. I love that. A lot of money was involved in that decimal point thing, like a lot of money. So that's really a dumb. The dummy reporter is fantastic. I love the fact that the Captain America guy had angel wings. I'm not really sure what that has to do with Captain America, because Captain America can't fly, right?
No.
He's just got the shield, right?
He can jump real high. He
can jump real high, but he can't fly.
No.
He's
just got that badass shield.
Yeah, that thing can kind of fly.
Yeah. Well, he whips it and it goes into walls and stuff.
And your jaw.
Yeah. You know, I've seen all the Avenger movies, and I've seen all the Captain America movies. You'd think I'd know what Captain America would be able to do.
You know, they don't really showcase his talents as well as you'd think.
You know, he's kind of...
He just beats people up, and that's that.
You know, in the Avengers movies, I mean, especially the last one in... Mm. What the hell was the last one called? Endgame, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a major... Like, he was majorly in charge in that one.
Large and in charge.
Yeah. Good old Chris Evans with his face. and then, of course, we have the dummy who accidentally stabbed himself. We get that one a lot.
Makes sense.
There's people who are always like, oh, well, it didn't go down this way. I need to prison. So,
is that what they say? Exactly?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I got to go with the dummy reporter too. The dummy reporter who said the dead man was unavailable for comment. But man, the cardboard cutout thing makes me happy. I don't know why. That one just thrills me. Okay, where are you? What's your thinking, Esmeralda?
I have to go with the reporter.
Ah, so it's unanimous.
Yeah,
yeah.
She was so serious.
Yeah. Can we play it one more time? If we can play we have the winner of the dummy of the week, and we get to hear her mistake again. This is directly from the newscast that she broadcast. And
I just need 1 second.
All right, 1 second.
How did no one else tell her?
Yeah, like
people listen to these things and nobody
said
that was a
hey,
thing.
He's unavailable for comment because he's dead. You just said that. So we got it? Here we go.
We tried to reach out to the man who died in this pursuit. They were unavailable for comment. Micah, back.
I hope so.
Back to you in the studio.
Let's see, Michael, back to you. Did Michael go, what? When she threw it back to him, I mean, I would love to see how his what his reaction was. Like, Michael, back to you. What? Wait a minute. What?
This
what?
Just in. We are now hiring at yeah. KTLA.
Wow. All right. Okay. Yeah, but I still love the cardboard cutout, and I'm glad that it's back where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and it didn't sustain any injuries.
Now, you're a football fan, Tom?
I would say so, yeah.
Is Patrick Mahomes, is he good?
Yeah, man.
Like, real good?
Like the Bears had a chance to get him, and they didn't.
Oh.
Like, and he's a total beast.
Is he worthy of a cardboard cutout of him being stolen from McDonald's?
Oh, man.
Not that
know.
I would put you on the spot for encouraging theft, but if he's that big a deal, it's like, man, I got to have a cardboard cutout of this guy.
I'd love to have a cardboard cutout of Patrick Mahomes in my house.
Well go to
McDonald's.
Them.
Yeah.
Well, they probably got him chained up now.
Yeah,
or
they probably do.
Like that.
But it's cardboard. You can just rip the chain out.
But yeah. You know what? I'll probably try to get a nice big Hamburglar statue before I go after Mahomes.
Go right for the Hamburglar.
Gonna burgle him.
Hey, remember, Esmeralda, you remember when they tried to turn the Hamburglar into a real dude? When they had a real mask, like a guy dressed up like the Hamburglar,
oh,
and like, this
no.
is the new Hamburglar. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh.
That sounds frightening.
You gotta look it up. It's terrifying. You gotta look it up. It's, I guess if you search new Hamburglar mascot or human Hamburglar mascot, when you see this, I'm telling you, these things are supposed to be fun for kids. All the characters in McDonald's are supposed to be fun for kids. This is nightmare-inducing. Like, if this dude popped up as the Hamburglar, kids would not sleep for 4 months.
Well, it's almost as bad as when they had tried to clone a bunch of Grimaces in the basement.
What?
Don't feed them after midnight.
Yeah.
They multiply.
They multiply. You don't want a wet Grimace.
Is that what they're calling it nowadays?
That's a prank that I used to do.
The wet Grimace.
Give the guy an old wet Grimace. Yeah, that was a college prank back in the days. The old wet Grimace. Esmeralda's looking this up on your phone. Are you seeing the human Hamburglar?
No, I only keep seeing some weird cartoon mask version of a hamburger with a face.
Oh, that's not it.
No.
All right, I'll try and find it. I'll try and find it.
I think that's Mayor McCheese.
It's because I put human hamburger costume.
Oh, Hamburglar. Hamburglar.
I think it filled it in for me.
He burgles the ham.
Hamburglar.
Right. Human Hamburglar.
Oh, yeah. He looks so... he just looks really... He doesn't seem fun in any way.
No, he seems creepy. He's like the dude next door who dresses weird.
He's already been to prison.
He's going to steal your hamburgers.
Right.
It's like, cool. Into my house.
Yeah, and kill me while I sleep.
And eat a hamburger.
That's right. All right, we got a break here. The news is coming up right after this. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck. Because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping. But when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight. Out of context. Context. What's up? Tell them where you're from. Straight out of context. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Friday morning, live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran has your Friday morning drive. We are in the middle of our regular features. We've got no Nick D Spies in there, but keep listening. That's the idea. Listen 24/7 when anybody mentions me. In any capacity, jot down the day, the time, who said it, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We'll get a few of those for next week. And also, this is Straight Out of Context, and Esmeralda Leon is here. Hi, Esmeralda.
Hi.
What are you doing?
Sitting here.
Good.
Listening.
Now, we're hoping, because we're going to do Straight Out of Context, and mm-hmm. you know you're familiar with Straight Out of
yes.
Context. This is when the listeners listen 24/7, and whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and you send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And you're particularly a fan of the Lou Manfredini out of context.
Yes.
I happen to be a fan. It's almost a tie,
mm-hmm.
but for me, it's Dave Ennett
yeah.
and Orion.
Yeah. No, those are good, too.
Yeah. They, because of who Dave and Orion are.
Right.
They are unbelievable pros.
Yeah.
Who would never talk like that in a million years. And so when they end up, when Dave or Enid, Dave or Enid, or Orion or Samuelson end up on Straight Out of Context, it makes me delighted.
Yeah, it's a good day.
So hopefully we'll get some of those, and we'll get a Lou Manfredini one in there for you. Tom, what the hell?
What the hell is right? First one is John Williams coming to us from Brian J.
We should have more guys selling wieners.
It's an untapped market.
Hey. Was he talking about, like, mm-hmm. baseball game?
Well, he's talking about just, like, street vendors.
Oh, street
vendors. Which I agree. Sure. We should have more hot dog guys.
Man, I wish there was hot dogs just on every corner.
I agree.
My hot dog intake would be way up if that were.
I totally agree. I think that's a smart statement, although I would never refer to it as a wiener. Red Hot? Frankfurter?
Not wiener.
No. Bratwurst?
Well, that's different.
Oh, fair enough.
It's different than a hot dog. So... All right. John wants more wieners. Okay, we got that. All right.
All right, next up, Steve Cochran.
Oh.
A regular. Caught by Fox Valley Mike.
Well, Dave and I have slept together.
Oh!
Scandal.
And Dave is in there, too.
Dave so adjacent, yeah.
Wow.
I bet Dave was the big spoon.
Wow. Oh, Dave kept him. Dave makes Steve feel safe.
Oh.
That's what I think. He holds him and makes him feel
he's
safe.
The rock. Yeah, no.
That steely demeanor of his.
Exactly. All right.
All right. Another John Williams here coming to us from Chris.
Who doesn't want a hand-pulled noodle on a first date?
The real kicker is he's talking to legendary restaurant critic Phil Vettel. Phil Vettel, pardon
me. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, Who doesn't want a hand-pulled noodle?
Yeah.
Come on.
That's how he talks to a legend of his craft.
Of course. Wow, John, all over the place. Man. Okay.
All right, next up, it's you, Nick.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Yes, it is. Coming to us from Jesse.
He used to pull it out. What was I talking about?
Talking about your buddy who pulled out his glass eye.
Oh. Did I ever tell you the story of my buddy who had a glass eye?
I want to say
I went
yes.
to high school. He used to pop it out and put it in people's soups and stuff.
It's a horrible thing to do.
Did he do it in high school?
Yeah.
Okay, then yes.
Yeah, he was my high school guy. He was my buddy in high school. Had a glass eye. Used to pop it out and put it in people's soups. And then he's the one who went nuts in the gymnasium and kicked a ball and it shattered a lamp and glass came...
Raining down
with him, and he had his eye was taken out, so he had the socket, and he was just laughing as glass came raining down. It's a picture that I will never forget, and as I replay it in my mind, it's always in slow motion. Paul, one-eyed Paul, with glass.
Was the eye in his hand?
No, he put it in his locker because in gym, because he was a football player,
right.
And any kind of physical activity, you'd have to like take the eye out. Because like there's a possibility that it'll pop out. But if you're playing football and you get hit, it might get jarred back up into your head. So he would have to take for physical activity. He would have to take the glass eye out, and he would leave it in the locker.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did he cover up the eye socket?
He would say, you know, there were times. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he would have his eye closed, but like there were times when he would put an eye patch on. But for the most part, he would just walk around with no eye.
Now, could he? So he could willingly close that one eye.
Yeah. He didn't have an eye in there, but he could close it if he wanted to. But he usually just kept it open because he can see inside his head.
that just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of work. But it's also, you know, it's a lot of work, but it's also great pranks. It's not better than the wet grimace.
Eyes and soup.
All right. What's next?
Next up is the queen of Straight Out of Context.
Who, by the way, texted me during Big Brother.
Oh, I knew she would.
Not texted me, but made a comment on my Facebook post. her post, Tom, since you're watching, yeah, her post was, Cliff is delusional.
Yeah. No, he's gone full Colonel Kurtz. Yeah. Like, he's just crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
Wendy Snyder here, caught by, let's see, Scott in Carpentersville.
Dogs like to do it with their heads. Why not my feet?
What? What?
Sticking your feet out the window of a car as it moves.
Oh.
Like a dog puts his head out.
Like his dog puts his head out. Yeah. Okay. All right. While you're driving.
Yeah. But
yeah, that's not dangerous at all.
Okay.
Of course, you can't have Wendy without Bill. Oh. Here's Bill Leff.
Do you need some oral?
Oh, now.
Caught by Jesse.
You got a filthy, you got a dirty mind.
Dirty mind.
Okay, next.
All right, celebrity one here celebrating 25 years of the WGN-TV morning show. Here's Pat Tomasulo, caught by Mark D.
So I can imagine that they're going to be looking for things to fill holes with.
He's talking about the Jardiner bit that he did, right?
No, he's talking about potential reruns of Man of the People.
Oh, well, because he did a bit on Man of the People where he filled potholes with Jardiner. It was a very funny bit. Good stuff. Thought that's what he was talking about. Okay, next.
All right, Mark Carmen here, caught by Linda.
I'm laying there. You're rubbing me. It feels good.
What the hell is going on there?
Couples massages.
Oh, God.
That didn't make it any better.
Okay.
No.
Hey,
no,
by
no,
the way,
no.
is let me ask you a question. Is there a remote for Cochran this morning?
Yes.
Oh. Because I was going to say, Mary's not here. I get
the
nervous.
Panic.
And Dave's not here. What about Cheech and Chong? It's Dave, man. Dave's not here. No, yeah, so I always get, because without question, Mary shows up. Where are they doing the show from?
Mm-hmm. You know, I do not know. I saw. Right. I was talking to Adam about it earlier.
Because I was looking up. I was looking up at
from
the screen
somewhere.
And traffic. Mary always gets here at 4:30 every day. It's it's almost 4:45, and she wasn't here. And I had a panic attack. And then Dave is always here by at least 4:45, and he's not here. So I had to figure by process of elimination. I figured out it must be a remote. Okay, we'll find out. All right, continue.
All right, Mark D caught Nick here.
It gets hard nowadays. Oh, man.
Definitely does.
What was I talking about?
Talking about Know Your Onion.
Oh. Oh, because you can't tell the difference between a fake news story and a real news story anymore in this insane world that we live in. Okay.
Another WGN-TV personality here. Here's Anna Beliveau.
He was so fantastic.
She's crazy. I love her.
She's something else.
I love her. Have you ever seen the footage of her going nuts with Ricky Martin?
Yes.
I awesome. Adore that. It's so good.
So did Ricky.
Yeah, he did. I love Ricky Martin. He's the best. Did you watch that Giada Versace?
Yeah, the assassination.
Not Giada.
Oh, yeah.
Her brother, Gianni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
He's very good in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, one more before we break, right? We still have a few more?
Yeah, we still got a few more.
Okay, we'll do one more and then we'll break.
Yep, here's Bill Leff, caught by Lady Jane.
And I was all wet when I said it, too.
Oh, man. Like a grimace.
Good old wet grimace.
Oh, man. Was he in a shower? Or what?
They were talking about the song Moving in Stereo.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and the Phoebe
were they talking
was
about?
Yeah. Was he doing the famous shot?
Was he, I mean, what did he do, reenact it?
So help me God, if I saw Bill Leff reenact that scene, I'd claw my own eyes out.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, we're going to break here for some weather, and we come back. We got more Straight Out of Context, and we'll get a few fly jams in as well. And as Brother Leon is here.
Hi.
Hi. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb.
Context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. We're back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're wrapping up Straight Out of Context. Ezra Leon is here. Hi.
Hi.
Okay. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, Tom, let's get back to the contexts.
All right. Scott from Carpentersville caught Wendy here.
I cannot stand when someone is giving it to you and you put your hands up like, come on, give me more.
Oh, man. Shocking. Oh, man. Shocking.
She's not wrong.
No. All right.
All right. Jim here caught Roger Badish.
I wouldn't mind paying for it if it hadn't been free for the last 20 years.
What were they talking about?
You know, I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, was it the Cubs?
No, they were talking about, like reading articles online.
Oh,
like
right.
Having to pay
gotcha.
For articles.
Okay. All right. I thought they were talking about the Cubs because you have to pay to watch them now.
Yeah.
Next
yeah,
season. Yeah. The Marquee Network.
Oh, jeez. Goodness.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Listener Brian J. went on a marathon here and submitted just a bunch of great ones here. So these are the next few are going to be attributed to him. Here's Dean Richards.
I'm going to eat it for the next 10 days.
Good Lord. Okay.
John Williams here.
She's sticking her nose in my pocket and she's trying to pull it out.
What? The wieners again?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's where it is.
Those
okay.
wieners. All right. Of course, Lou Manfredini.
There you go.
Anywhere there's vegetation, I need to get that wet.
You love the Lou
Manfredini.
Oh, it
doesn't disappoint.
Absolutely. All right.
Especially when there's two of them.
Uh-oh.
The knob is in your hand.
Oh, Esmeralda, nice day to come back.
Oh, that was good.
And then finally, in honor of football season, Fox Valley Mike caught OB.
Oh, boy.
That's what you're getting paid to do. I don't want to hear any excuses or anything else. You're getting paid that kind of money. Show up.
Jeez. All right.
Yeah, you got to love those guys. Cos Hamp and OB. It's just
they're very passionate.
When they lost that first game against Green Bay, it was some of the finest radio I've ever heard in my life. Just them screaming. It was fantastic. Okay. Should we squeeze in a couple of fly jams?
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
That's right. I'm Wiki Wiki Nicky, and Viggity Viggity Vic, verified double V, running around like a lunatic in the newsroom. Esmeralda the Heart Melda is here.
Yeah.
And is Luscious Hushes here?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
All right, Luscious Hushes, what are some of the requests that we have received on this fine morn?
All right, our first request here coming to us from our friend Ike. It's It Feels Good by Tony. Ooh,
love this song. This is like a definitive fly jam. Like, you know, the era of, you know, when we coined the phrase a fly jam, that is smack dab in the wheelhouse of a fly jam. Tony.
Yes.
And they each spell Tony different. T-O-N-Y, T-O-N-E, T-O-N-I.
I always thought it was Tony Tone Tone.
No, it's Tony Tone. Is that what you thought it was?
I thought it was Tony Tone.
It's Tony. Okay. All right. What's the next request?
All right. Next request is coming to us from our pal Roosevelt. A little Chaka Khan.
Oh.
Back in the Day. Live.
Lights out. Mama was strict about them kids running in now. She just went better be in.
By the way, I'm looking at Dean's weekend roundup here. He gave Downton Abbey a B+. He didn't say anything about Ad Astra. He showed a clip of Rambo, but they didn't screen it for the critics.
He's just going to have to go see it just like everyone else.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to see it tonight.
There you
I want to just I enjoy watching Sylvester Stallone kill people.
I'm sure he'd be happy to hear that from
yeah.
you.
So, all right.
All right, got time for one more?
Yeah, just one more.
Right, real quick here, a very early Fly Jam. Aretha Franklin, Don't Play That Song from Mark.
The days that I spent with you. Oh, no, don't let it play. It fills my heart with pain. Please stop it right away. Cause I remember just what it said. He said, darling. I know that it lies.
All right. There you go, everybody. Little Fly Jams for you there. Esmeralda, it's just a delight every time you come
Aww,
down here.
And
we'll see you again soon, right?
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
That was fun. That was really, really fun. And congratulations on winning for the record.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
I'm going to go right now.
You better go right now.
Zombie Eddie Money and
Rick Ocasek. Waiting for you. All right, thanks, Esmeralda.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to break. The news is up after this.